Good morning and welcome, everyone. Today is Thursday, February 2nd, 2017. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening for their Thursday 9 a.m. administrative workshop. The full board is present with legal, and we have item number 1A is order number 2017-006 in the matter of an amendment to the Josephine County Administrative Policy and Procedures, A5, and it's in regards to responding to citizen complaints in a confidential manner. Continued from January 26, 2017.
Right. So, good morning, Board. Mm-hmm. And indeed, this is continued from last week. I think the Board wanted a chance to take another look at it over the course of the week and possibly offer any observations, critiques, edits, concerns, or approvals. The one point that does bear repeating that I mentioned last week is that existing county policy does permit for confidential complaints, and so to the extent there may be some discussion within next week's business session, it's worth just comprehending that. The existing county policy is accepting of confidential complaints with the carve-out, the intentional carve-out from almost 25 years ago of complaints going to planning, environmental health, and what's the third one? Yeah. So many drawings on them, sorry, folks. Planning, environmental health, and the related one.
Building safety.
Building safety. So there it is. Planning, building safety. Okay. So currently, if you do nothing, then confidential complaints will continue to be refused by those three departments. But if you make this change to the personnel policy manual, then confidential complaints will be acceptable to those departments. Of course, there is a caveat as to when the director can initiate investigations based upon confidential complaints. And so hopefully that's been captured within the text of the proposed policy change.
So confidential complaints will be can be acted upon by those three departments when they are received by more than one address within a half a mile?
Yes. So, and that's just going to apply just to the confidential complaints.
Yeah.
So the scenario would be that the community development director receives a single confidential complaint about a code violation. Well, the policy would then not permit the director to initiate an investigation on that basis. There would have to be a second complaint that would come in from within a half mile radius. If it's confidential. Or, of course, the director can always initiate an investigation of planning. We're not talking about solid waste, but of a planning violation upon a non-confidential complaint. So that's existing policy also.
Yeah.
So with the existing policy, if we repeal 89-7 or 93-106, whichever they are that limit the confidential complaints, if we simply repeal them, what would the policy be?
Then confidential complaints are acceptable on any basis to the county. That's the default.
To me, that's just simple. Just repeal an old policy that limits one section. Since we already have a countywide policy that allows it in other areas, why be inconsistent? Why not have a consistent policy countywide, just repeal the section that limits this area, and then it's done? But
whole crux of the conversation that's been going on since 89.
Yeah.
That sums it up. Yes. There's a rather thick file. Many boards have previously gone over this point. And I think it's an attempt to adapt to the times, is what it reflects. And so as
we are pretty cool that way. Changes,
I'm not prepared to move for a full repeal of it. I'm trying to find some middle ground, see how that works for a little while. We revisit this in 6 months or a year or something like that and see if we've got some improvement in the ability of citizens who feel aggrieved by a neighbor who's got a violation but aren't opening it up so much that you've got people who just don't like their neighbor and for whatever reason go down the litany of problems. But I don't want to be named and keep pushing planning to do stuff. This requires, you have to have two people within a half a mile if they're wanting to be confidential on an issue like that.
Question on the half a mile route as well. It says half a mile of the violation. What if the property is a huge property and this corner of the property has the violation? Is it a half a mile from the property or half a mile where the violation is?
That would be interpreted as a half a mile from the property. line.
But it doesn't say that. It says half a mile from the violation.
Okay. It can.
Does it?
It does. Which to me, in a letter of the law, would mean half a mile from the incident location.
I see it as public property as well.
I just don't know if we want to clarify that from the violation property. Just add that word to make sure that it's covered.
Check.
I see big properties being less of an impact to their neighbors. So if you've got 160 acres, okay, so they've got a violation. Could be a half a mile. Could be a mile. And 160 acres could be 1 mile long and a quarter of a mile wide. I don't know that that's as big of a problem on an R5 acre situation. You really can't get away from that, I see. You know, and a piece of property that could be 500 feet on each side.
I guess for me, I just would want to make sure that the intent, the spirit of the law is not lost in the letter of the law. And that's one of those letter of the laws that could potentially...
Yeah, sure. So this is just a policy. We can refine this tomorrow. We adopt it, we move it forward, and it doesn't quite work. The spirit, I think, is really important to capture what the board is intending planning staff and building safety and solid waste to pursue, you know, that balancing act between total disclosure of who your accuser is, or, no, there's an issue here and there's a challenge in those people who might be the violators, and having to figure out a way to mitigate that. So.
At what point in time in the process do you get to face your accuser?
When it gets
to court?
Yes. The accuser would technically be the county in this kind of a case.
Okay.
But if the county then were to call the complainant as a witness, then yes, you get to face the accuser.
Okay.
That's right.
You said if. I think the accuser would probably have the opportunity in a court trial to ask the county, who's doing this? Where's your evidence? And then us to provide our evidence. Well, you know, Jane Doe at X, Y, and blah, blah, blah. The other one, those people, you know.
Does the county have the authority to rate and say, you know what, this is not going to go anywhere?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, before we go to court,
the
county legal counsel and whoever the violation, bring it to the board and say, this is the issue. What do you guys think? You think we should go forward and pursue this, or no? You know, and they'll make a recommendation and say, I think we can win this case. There's a real violation. This is a good use of staff time and energy. Or, you know, they're making a little bit of progress, or no, there's no evidence, or whatever. You know, we are the final case though on when it moves forward or not. You know, based on legal and the staff's recommendations. So,
yeah, to kind of paint the scene within a courtroom, how this would play out, I would suspect it'd be, so we would put Denise, the planning enforcement officer, whoever investigated it, she would get on the stand and say, okay, tell us about the case. They would say, we received confidential complaints regarding this property, so I went out to investigate. My, meaning Denise, is the code enforcement officer's observations were such, and then the judge would hear what the code enforcement officer observed. This is the accuser. So, and then if the defense were to say, who are your confidential complaints, then we would have to cite the public records law, which prohibits the county, after giving an assurance to the confidential complainant, from providing the identity of the complainant. So the complainant would still remain anonymous, even in that scenario, unless we as the county, like, affirmatively said, we want you to be a witness here.
In the case law that you offered as well, there was actually a box for the person to check saying they wanted to remain confidential.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that would be appropriate, is make it clear on the application or a complaint form that there is a specific box that, you know, that there's not a question of they were intending to be confidential or not. Unless it's by phone.
Right, yeah.
But, I mean...
You can provide a phone complaint. You'd have to find a written complaint, right?
Yeah,
the written
complaints are in writing. I believe sometimes they might take them over the phone and write down the complaint for them, but that's generally, they are all in writing.
I think they need to be in writing,
yeah.
Because everybody has the interpretation,
mm-hmm.
And then, you know, when it's that person and they're signing and saying, yeah, that's
right.
Exactly what I'm complaining about, that seems pretty important to me, that there's that paper trail, that we're not, you know, alluding to the idea that somebody's making some sort of an accusation and that they want to be confidential. Everything's clearly delineated in there. John Hancock's right there.
I agree with Commissioner Morgan that there needs to be a box checked or an initial bar or something that they know that this, that everybody knows that they are, they agree they want to be confidential.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But I'm alright going forward with it. I won't. I mean, as far as moving forward towards repealing the previous with the new.
Or amending. Yeah. Great. Are we just amending, or are we replacing the previous one?
Yeah, replacing.
Okay. Great.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a change in policy. This is an administrative action. Move forward to next weekly business day.
Sure.
If before then or during that hearing, there's something that's brought up, we can certainly either change it if it's just a wording element, or bring it back. It's only done when we finalize it, and then if in a week we find something, we can still change it. It's not an ordinance, it's just an internal policy. So, of course, we'll move it forward. Thanks a lot. Appreciate trying to help us thread that needle. I think legal counsel or...
I can come in.
Yeah, we'll do it jointly. But I think it's good for you to come and maybe present the history on how we...
Is that the evening meeting, Dave?
I don't know.
Okay.
Okay. I can also invite Julie.
Yeah, that'd be helpful. Item 1B is proposed IGA with Oregon Judicial Department, 160056 for courthouse improvement projects. Unfortunately, we are not 100% prepared to review this today. We had scheduled a meeting to try to get it ready to bring to the board and or at least kind of provide some of our comments as to how we could move forward. I will say Ryan Johnson and I, our facilities director, who would be manager, would be in charge of facilitating this IGA. So it's to accommodate the court on some improvements to their facilities upstairs to kind of accommodate the e-court system.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't happen in the last go-around of stuff when they were doing improvements. So there's a couple of things that are challenging to me. I think the way this has been originally presented to the board, we were going to just go out and solicit bids to get the engineering done for the project, and we've done that. The engineering and plans have been determined, and those are finalized and brought back. It was then presented to that would be all that we were doing, and then it was presented to the county that we were going to just hire the contractor. We would put out for bid the project and hire the contractor for the court system department of administrative services for the state. And it's since morphed into a lot more, in my opinion, as project managers. So we would not only do what we said we would do before by hiring the contractor, in this proposed IGA, we'd also be responsible for, the project is expected to come in at $100,000 or less, but in this provision, in this IGA, the county would be responsible for any costs over $100,000. So it's a little challenging for me that we don't control this project as far as the plans. Contractors are really challenging to get, as Mr. Johnson has told me, for certain projects. This one might be easy, this one might be challenging. But I could certainly see the idea of moving from courtroom to courtroom, and we're supposed to help manage schedules for the contractor in and throughout courts, and so that they're able to accommodate that. There's a number of different points at which I think that this could morph into potentially a larger project without our control, and I think legal, we can accommodate that if we needed to, but I think we want to make that pretty clear in this IGA that you know, if we stick to the plan, maybe we're okay, but if for some reason courts has a different proposal or a different direction, a change order, that we're not responsible for that. So it's a little outside the bounds of what we would normally be responsible for, I think, and I'm saying that politely. So I'd want to take our time, and we've scheduled yesterday's meeting to tomorrow, and I think we're going to have a better chance of really going through the finer points and being able to explain. This is the first draft. Who knows? We could probably come up with a corrected version or a version that works for us, and then kick it back to court and see how it goes. And I think that's my expectation of how I'd like to help facilitate.
Always forward. Get real nervous when they want to transfer responsibility. The county signs on as the contractor, as the initiating the contract. And when they move that from the state to county, whatever happens, you're on for over $100,000. And it, you almost wonder what they're up to. It's kind of like ODOT saying, okay, alternative A, the city's going to sign the contract with the contractor, and they're responsible for payment. But then you find out that it's kind of a reimbursement thing. This thing puts the money in the account right off the bat, up to $100,000. But, you know, we don't have any idea. We got any kind of preliminary numbers as to what it's going to be other than, we think it's going to be under 100 grand.
I don't, and I think that's accurate. We think it's going to be under 100 grand. The other one, there's a element of if there is a warranty period, there's a defect in the completion of the project, it's our responsibility, it'll be legal's responsibility to pursue that to be remedied. And I'm like, well, okay, but that's not also our money that we're chasing. That's not our resource that was,
right.
You know, we did our due diligence.
But it is our building. And so at some level, I do think it is appropriate that we are involved in the project management of our building. Because at the end of the day, we're the ones responsible for making sure the building's standing upright and anything major going on. And if we're not at the table and something happens, it's our liability anyhow if something major goes wrong for our building.
Yeah, you're still major in building and structure.
And I know they're just changing
design
and all that other
structure.
Kind of stuff.
We, in my opinion, I totally agree.
But there's a door in there that's structured.
I want to pull that out. That is not, it's an ADA compliant thing. We're not required to do it. If we choose to do it, it should not be part of this proposal. It's a good catch. I think we do that on our own and just get it done. My when I would do this for something else, I approve the plans. Sounds good. You can do this structurally. Makes no problem. You know, we get the asset when you fix it. That happened at the fairgrounds with the horse racing or something else. We don't manage the project. They do the project. We just approve of it and say, yes, this is all well and good. Go forth and do it, and we'll inherit the issue with the result of the project. We don't do it. But we are in a partnership with the court, and I want to be good partners and good landlords. It feels like we're taking on all of the responsibility, even to manage the schedule to where it accommodates for the courts and stuff. That's a lot of... Ryan's down a staff person, has been for a year, and this is not necessarily something that's been in his wheelhouse of projects in the queue. So that's something else to consider. We have been... working with courts on this for quite some time. My other concern is that it initially was this, and now it is morphing into this. I don't know how much it can morph before.
Well, does it have any idea what the time span is to do all of these improvements?
I don't. They want it by June 30th.
Yeah, that's the end of the proposal.
It could be a fiscal year funding issue as well. Especially with the cuts coming from the state.
Yeah.
So they may have the money now that it won't be there later. So
I agree, that seems like something we need to get holding, and they need it.
Not interested in holding this up. It makes sense, but let's work out those tweaks as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm. I've had it for a little while. I've just been a little busy, and it's just something that's going to take some effort to get it through. So anyway, I just wanted to bring you guys into the fold on that, and we'll revisit it next week for sure. For
okay. Some we can find out that, you know, approximately what does the engineer have an estimate? If you've done all the architecture and engineering on this thing, they usually come up with that it's going to take so long to do it and it's going to be so much money. Do they have any estimates that they put in their report at all?
Yeah, this is just the idea. I haven't seen the plans.
Okay.
So Ryan signed off that the plans were okay.
He
hired the contractor to do the engineering and the plan development. So I'm confident that those are tight. So you're right. That those are good questions.
Okay.
I'm okay.
Oh, okay. Great.
I have an agenda question when you're done.
Yeah. Well, legal up. Is it for legal?
I was told that we were going to be having the deputy fire marshal presentation on the stuff today, and I'm not seeing on the agenda now, so I'm just curious.
Next week.
Okay.
Next week, yes. So I was getting, when we were talking about that, I was getting confused as to which week that was coming up. My understanding is it's next week, but I will absolutely confirm it for you as to when he's coming in.
Got it.
Were you guys here for that?
Sure.
It feels like you would be here for that.
Oh. Yeah.
next week.
On Tuesday now.
Sorry, guys.
Dry run?
We enjoy coming and hanging out.
Riveting. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I think there's a call about any time. You have any questions? You should know about your gender or anything like
that. Yeah, we'll get on board with that.
Okay, good. See you then.
Thanks. Sorry about that.
Yeah, sorry.
Any matters from commissioners? Commissioner Young? I have something, but I think I should wait for Commissioner Morgan to get back. I really appreciate kind of accommodating the change in our schedule. I like the idea that we're able to kind of move fluidly for our meetings, that when they make sense, and also looking at other counties to what's best practices, how they do stuff. And so we looked at moving executive sessions not on a Wednesday after some of our pretty big meetings or before our evening meeting. Executive sessions can sometimes be, well, probably some of the most important things that we discuss. And so I want to be as fresh as possible. Moving those to a Tuesday really could accommodate and help with that. Pat and I were talking, and Wendy and some others, about what about Klamath County does this, structuring not just executive sessions, but the legal issues that are weekly come up, that we would discuss those and not keep, you know, staff waiting for sometimes a half an hour or an hour discussing legal issues. We would do those on either the Tuesday or Wednesday, whichever day the executive session works, and that would accommodate for the other matters that we were wanting to do. So we do a public session first, I think. We'd still structure it like right around 2 o'clock, discuss the legal stuff, and then we would go into executive session and proceed with those kinds of things to kind of keep all the legal stuff. It wouldn't preclude legal from being on an admin meeting, but I think it would reduce the amount of time. You know, we could discuss the coordination letters and things that may take longer discussion that really don't involve managers. And I think it could be more efficient. So it's just a thought. We could try it for a little while. And
so with us moving executive to Tuesdays at 2, we kind of lost one of our public discussions we were starting to kind of have Tuesday afternoon, sometimes a general discussion as well. What if we put that on Wednesdays at 2 and have that be legal? I just think that you guys come in here more often than once a week. And so, admin, they could take you off of that one, but you're here on Tuesdays as well. You're here at executive as well. You're here at admin as well. I mean, there may be more opportunity and more need, and it seems like cutting them completely out might miss an opportunity to get some work done. I don't want to inhibit.
I don't think cutting them out at all. Maybe I wouldn't. You may be at almost all of them, but you're.
We don't very often go to general. That's more on the unusual.
Okay.
General discussions are not, I think they should be fluid. We don't have those as a hard and set. But we do try to keep our meetings to Tuesday through Thursday, because Mondays and Fridays are days we're either traveling or away at meetings and such. I try to structure ONC meetings will always be on a Thursday afternoon, Friday. And so I will be here for admin. AOC stuff is on Monday. I will likely try to be here.
I think I was just thinking that we seem to have a gap on our Wednesday afternoons now that was a meeting time, and we were seeing meetings on Tuesday afternoons, I thought, or was that not? It just was.
The discussion is at 9 o'clock on Tuesdays and 2 o'clock on Thursdays.
So sometimes we've been swapping them. Maybe that's just because it's been a crazy month.
I have not seen a set pattern yet. So whatever set pattern you want to make, it's going to be brand new to me, and I'm okay with it.
Got it.
I appreciate that. There will be a better word. I have been working with the staff every week on trying to get things kind of clear, and I think it's kind of working.
Yeah.
It used to be years and years ago that each department would have a set time. We would go in every morning, I think Thursday mornings, and we would have all of our agenda items just once a week. And then some departments would meet with the board quarterly, some would meet monthly, some would meet weekly, and then all be set times during the week or the month or whatever. And so then you would just have one department at a time and not have one day, a morning long meeting. That's just a
fine with me. I mean, we want to not waste people's time to be sitting in here for hours and make the most of the second thing. And so if the quarterlies are offset on a regular basis, then it seems to be effective. But
I don't have a problem with the way the departments are updating in the quarterlies. They seem to be working, in my opinion, just fine on the admin calendar. I think this is going to make a big efficiency improvement with our administrative meeting. So let's try it. we'll see how it goes, and just appreciate your patience in being flexible.
So we will be getting moved to where?
They'll be in conjunction with the executive session.
And that'll be okay 2 days earlier for you guys on all that?
Yes, we can make it work legally. Yeah.
Eventually it'll catch up.
It'll catch up, yeah.
But at first it'll be a hurry. Yeah. It's really what I see it as is moving this part of admin over to the legal part of the agenda where we'd already have executive.
Mm-hmm.
So executive would still stay. And if anyone else had executive items like JJ to put on, it would still go in that meeting.
It just kind of gives you guys Tuesday afternoons is legal time.
Mm-hmm. And you guys.
Yeah.
It was just an easier way too of adding that other category, so
yeah,
it has to be an open meeting.
Right.
Yeah, and it's another opportunity to discuss things because we've got this executive. There was a confidential memo that was just sent out. I know it's confidential, but I don't see that there's liabilities that we couldn't discuss here. But I don't want to make that decision right now. But we've got to get that dealt with. There are people that are looking for opportunities, and we need to address them. And I like having more than just one opportunity to kind of discuss these things. If it comes up and we need a spot on legal on admin on Thursday, we can do it. So we did everything we possibly could to kind of consolidate them, and maybe they don't need to be here. And if spending more time for managers sitting here, we can get them in, get them out, and a lot of counties were checks. Jackson and I think Klamath break out their HR and legal issues from their workshops because they do take time and they're taking up time for other people sitting there. So
my only point about Wednesday afternoons is potentially if we needed a spot too, we created a hole. So if we needed, we...
Holes aren't bad.
No, it seems like we don't have many of them.
No. That's about right. Okay, anything else? Great.
Thank you.
Kind of good.
Sure.
See you this afternoon.
That's right. I will be here for general discussion, actually. So.
I'm so excited. I can't wait. Bring balloons and... No, I'm kidding.
Number two is Tuesday.
Are you coming back for that one, too?
2A, 1, Intergovernmental Agreement 151689 between Josephine County and Oregon Department of Human Services, the DD 53 Client Transportation. Mr. Chancey forewarned us that he was coming back. And
here I am.
Good morning.
Good morning. This is a contract that we've had with the Oregon Department of Human Services for developmentally disabled clients to and from work sites and activity centers. So we bring them there in the morning, then we return and get them in the afternoon and bring them home. We finally had an opportunity to change the dollar amount that we're charging per ride. So prior to this, we were charging $7.47 a ride and now $15.03, so we've almost doubled it. The reason for the large, basically, increase in cost is all of these clients are eligible for our federal required paratransit service, which is a federal requirement under the Americans with Disabilities Act where we have to take people door to door. And that's what you see are some of our smaller vans and stuff like that. We have this as a group ride, but now there's enough people that we're sometimes having to do paratransit service for them. So that's essentially why their cost has increased as much. So this is 100% of the expense of that program, and now we're charging them that. So we're already 2 quarters into the fiscal year, so this will go into effect as soon as it gets signed, so it'll be the remainder of this year. And then at that point, it'll probably just be an addendum to extend the contract in the following years. And then at some point, we'll get the opportunity again, if our costs are higher than the actual contract amount, we can go ahead and change it at that point. prior to this, it hadn't been in front of the county commissioners. It was signed by the administrator at that point. I think it was Rosemary. And they had just been continuing, so now we're making this official and we're going ahead and getting everyone's signature. So,
will this cause could it cause any issues with any independent client, essentially your patient in the community, not being able to afford services with the price increase?
They're not paying for it.
So they're coming out of other...
Yeah, the cost of the client is not changing. The cost to the state is what's changing. So what happens is the client was paying $3 a day, and that's just going to continue. We're not going to adjust that rate at all. And the reason we charge them $3 a day is because if they were using paratransit service, it would be $4 a day. So we use it as a dollar incentive to get them into this large group ride, so we're not taking them all individually, because if we were transporting 15 to 20 people a day individually, it would be very expensive.
Did you get any pushback from DHS for the increase?
Surprisingly, no. I offered to split it in half, and we would increase half of it this year and then half the following year, and they said no. If that's what the rate was, they were willing to pay it.
Did you do any comps with our neighboring counties and find out if, you know, you went from, what was it, 7 to 14, I think?
Yes, 15.
Yeah. From 7 to 15. Maybe it's 25 over in Jackson County.
I didn't ask, and the reason is because there's very, I don't know how other organizations are doing these rides. Okay. My guess is no one's doing it like we are. Because what we've done is we've put in a cost incentive to the client to get them into these group rides, which they don't have to do. And I'm doing that so we can transport as many people as we possibly can in any given set. I don't know of anybody that's doing a program like this. So everyone else, if they have these DD53 rides, they're doing them individually. So my guess is their cost is upwards of $30 plus a client. But I don't have that many drivers. I don't have that many resources. I'm like, if we can get them in the group, right, let's do it.
Okay.
So that's what I'm asking for. There's actually two signature pages. There's a document return statement. I don't know who would sign that. There's not room for three signatures. And it's just an authorization saying that we are returning this document. And then there's an actual signature page for the county commissioners that everyone's signature line is on it.
Has it gone through legal?
Yes, it has. Legal had some comments on it, and I'm glad you brought that up. They had some comments on it that they wanted it changed, but it looks like they went ahead and agreed. Wally did. He said, let's go ahead and just sign it, and then we'll work on the changes at a later date so this process doesn't get held up. There was some minor verbiage that had to do with another issue that was in front of the county with the state.
Okay.
So other than that, they agreed it just so.
Nothing that changes liability. County's liability anywhere. Okay.
No.
Okay, let's move it forward.
So this goes to next week. Do we need to, at that time, designate liaison or something to be able to sign that one page and then the whole for the other?
Mm-hmm. I'll try to take a look at it and see whether or not it's a liaison thing or if it's a county policy, it'll be the chair.
Okay. Yeah. Well, someone signs it.
Doesn't probably matter.
Okay, perfect. And do you need me there for Wednesday?
It's up to the commissioner who's your liaison.
I don't think so. I think you pretty well covered it. If you'd like to come.
Yeah, I might be out.
I think it would be probably be a good idea. If you had a minute.
Okay, yeah.
If you're out of town, I would suggest giving him like a short couple of sentences to really kind of capture.
I'm working on that now. Tuesday asked for me to come over and help them with their transit system, and I volunteered.
Okay.
So that might be where I'm at, but I'll know today if that's mm-hmm. where it is. And if it is, then I will go ahead and put like a one page synopsis together for you.
Appreciate it.
Perfect. Thank you.
It always helps me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If anybody needs agendas, that's what that deck is right there for what we're doing here. So absolutely. We have veterans, and I don't see Ms. Shipley in the audience for item number 3. Is she excused? Or? I'm not sure. We'll come back to that if she's in the queue. Item number 4 is financial report and business update. Number A is professional services agreement between Josephine County and Management Partners for Public Works Assessment. This is a project that's been kind of in the queue for about a year. Rob Brandis and Arthur O'Hare are going to join us and talk about how we got here. You'll probably remember that Public Works received their last road payment of about $1 million last year. Those revenues have been decreasing over time. Rob, through no fault of his own, is trying to accomplish his maintenance requirements, but you know, we're looking at about a quarter of what we ought to be doing. And with storms like this, the need is growing, the resources are dwindling, no surprise. Stuff's getting more and more challenging, and figured it might be a good effort to try to figure out, you know, if there is anything that are low-hanging fruit opportunities for Mr. Brandis to employ in his office, his department, might be really helpful. But also from a public transparency that what we're doing is, you know, we're making good strides in an effort to maintain what I did, the back of the envelope, I think is like anywhere between a $750 and $1 billion asset out there of 580 miles of road. If you had to try to replace it through rights-of-way acquisitions, potentially 1,000 culverts and 100 bridges and roads and ditches and everything else, guardrails, it's not cheap. So maintaining that asset is a real important part of what Rob does. He's got a lot of responsibility. Like, you know, doing the back-of-the-envelope math, that's a lot to take care of.
A lot of coverage.
Yep.
Well, this incorporates fleet and everything else too, correct? This is the entire...
right, under the umbrella.
Works, and we have an opportunity to just kind of... Audits are always a good thing. Outside viewpoint, just kind of outside set of eyes. Are we on track with... I mean, we know that we're getting a lot done for what we're doing, but at the same time, having outside eyes look at it is a good thing.
Well, especially in transition times when we're looking at such a, you know, 20% or so decline in SRS funds representing 20% decline. I mean, that's $1.5 million, a lot of money.
I think it's really important that we catch this from the onset. This isn't an audit. It's just an assessment performance review kind of a thing.
Okay.
Audits are probably a little bit different, and that's not what we've asked for initially. So
I didn't mean
okay.
to use that word.
I know.
But yeah, but just another set of eyes to review.
Exactly. Well, I think the intent is right, but I don't want to use, I prefer not to use that word audit.
No.
So you guys
so bad connotations of IRS or something like that, yeah.
So we did go out to bid. We submitted an RFP, a request for proposal, back in December. Although it's been a long time in the works, but we sent out the RFP in December. Got four responses. The prices went from $48,007 at the low end to $58,003 at the high end. Fortunately for us. The 48.7, not only were they the low bidder, but they were also the one that gave us the best team. If you look at the people that they're assigning to this task, we've got a couple of former public work directors involved, we've got a fleet director involved, people who have done the work and that know the process. So,
do we have a scoring system to score the various companies?
Yeah, I did. I did bring a copy of that if you want to see that. Our scores, our composite scores are at the very bottom.
Okay.
You can see the individual criteria that was part of the RFP. We laid it out in front what we're going to look at and how much each point value is going to be. But and as you can see, basically the three scores, which was myself, JJ, and Rob, were unanimous in who submitted the best bid.
Independently unanimous.
Independently. We did not coordinate on this. We did not kind of collaborate.
Yeah, we did unanimous because everybody talked.
And admittedly, these are a bit esoteric. They always are. You know, when you do like an RFP for, you know, the city putting in a new water plant, everybody can submit, oh, here's our six staff pictures. They're always great things. So it's a bit tough, but I think Arthur mentioned what I was drawn to. There was a couple of previous public works directors, and they had also done a similar project for similar size municipalities. A couple of them said, you know, hey, we did this for Eugene. I don't care about the Eugene. That has nothing to do with how we do it. This had better fits in terms of prior experience.
One of the things from the last time that we visited this, we were going to look at was the scope. So looking at $48,000 was more than I wanted to spend, ideally. So refining what it is we're specifically asking them to accomplish and kind of take a look at, if we could reduce that through refining the scope of work, I like that idea. I don't need them to take a look at transit. In my opinion, transit is not where public discretionary dollars are kind of being allocated on our assets. That's a mostly federally funded, grant funded from the city kind of project. Kind of is what it is. and I think it's got bang for the buck, and that one I'm comfortable with. That's just my opinion.
So you're suggesting that we get to take a look at the scope and see if there's anything we'd like to weed out?
Well, that's what we were supposed to be doing from last time we visited this to now. And I didn't take the opportunity to do that.
My guess would be when they submit a tighter scope of work, it'll have various elements. If we say, yep, we're not interested in that, then we're not going to do that.
Well, and I put that in the RFP that we can negotiate and we can look at the various items.
Yeah,
so that's within the...
And then on the other end of that, yeah. You know, after going through, and I will call it an audit. You know, an audit is a horrible name, but, you know, it's just a matter of... taking a look at your department and making sure you have the tools, mm-hmm. they can swing both ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're asking, we're bearing our drawers here, but we went through a whole process over there and said, what about this that you didn't ask for, so therefore we don't have an opinion on it.
Absolutely.
And it was a very important element that we assumed was going to be in the final document that wasn't there. We said, you know, why, what, you know, I mean, this is obvious, you should look at that. It was so obvious that we did not specify
it in there.
And they said, no, you didn't ask us to look at it, so we didn't.
Yeah.
So I think we need to be very careful that we're saying, scope, we don't like, you know, we'd like to have under 48,000. Let's not take out some key elements of what I think we're looking for.
Right. And maybe that's just what they cost, and I'm
cheap.
I didn't want to spend that much.
So you're thrifty.
Okay.
Yeah.
My guess is as it gets closer, we haven't seen any detailed scope of work, but if they're looking to do like a review of our maintenance practices and all that, I personally have no interest in that. They're not going to have an aha moment to say, hey, here's a cheaper, better way to chip seal. It's not out there. We've got a state recognized chip seal program. What I would be interested in them saying is, hey, you've got IRIS, our interior road system. GIS products have changed a lot lately. Are there ways where we can, you know, add more horsepower on things like that of the tech nature or the internal administrative nature? So I think maybe we can just do, and maybe 48 is the final number, but that can be, I think, winnowed down into better areas.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
So, because the scope's not included in here, I mean, as far as that wasn't something that we had in our packet to look at. So if we're saying go forward, because personally, I don't want this to be drawn out forever. I'd like us to be moving forward. I want to see fleet. That's the one that I'd like to see done. And just as far as I know, staffing levels and stuff like that, if we're being efficient and effective and all.
Yeah. That makes a big difference. But I mean, I want to have an opportunity, or should have an opportunity, to maybe talk with the contractor,
mm-hmm.
have them in here and say, you know, the one thing that I'm looking at is if we do look to a long-term plan of moving public work and we consolidate that with another, you know, maybe we have to have a diesel mechanic engineer. But he's not working at full staff. You know, he's doing that. We're paying for diesel mechanic all the time, even though he's working on other things. That isn't his main reason we hired him, because we don't have the number of diesel equipment. But if we consolidated with a state, ODOT, or the city or something in our fleet maintenance, then we see those efficiencies. And so then we need to be pursuing that contract with them like we used to have. That kind of stuff would make a lot of sense to me. You're operating under your capacity of what you need to be efficient. Great. Tell us we need to go out and get that contract back from the city to do that for maintenance. And then we are efficient and we reduce our costs to us internally.
So usually that sit down is at the beginning when they come to town. So if we move forward, we get that opportunity to
right,
that's
that. That's in the RFP that they will come and we will have a discussion. Prior to the work being
started. Or do they have the ability to look at the private sector? Because you keep talking, well, let's use diesel mechanic, for instance. Okay, do they look at, do they go outside of the county's shop and say, you know what, you've got plenty of diesel mechanics around here to get a good competitive rate with, say, RPM or whatever it is that's out there in Murphy to do your maintenance on diesels and your shovels and all that other stuff? Do they do all that for Copa? Do they take into consideration, do they go look at outside sources to say, you don't need a guy that does fine maintenance on your grade all or whatever, because they can do it out there for less money, and you don't have to have them on staff.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something they would bring back?
Certainly could.
Or do they even look outside?
No, it certainly could be. I think that's kind of to Simon's point. So if we had a guy who's exclusively diesel mechanic, but we can run across the county reports and show that he's only turning wrenches on diesels for $600 a year, they would look and say, yeah, you know what, you guys ought to look at contracting that stuff out and reclassifying that position.
Yeah.
I want to, you know, somebody to do an evaluation that says, no, you can get the car wash guy to wash your cars cheaper than what you're doing here, or more efficiently on demand. It's supposed to pull in that guy from someplace else that he probably needs to be doing more of that, free him up. I don't know. That's the kind of stuff. And I don't know that it needs to be the full board. Honestly, Commissioner DeYoung, you're the liaison to this.
Right.
And I think as long as we understand where we're wanting to go, I don't necessarily need to be in that. I trust you. That's your job as the liaison to go facilitate this and be, you're not a city councilor from a standpoint that you have, you're an administrator here and you can be part of this process. It should serve you and Rob and Arthur.
We'll be talking because I have some real concerns on that particular side of it. And then the money side of it, like for personnel, mm-hmm. Do you take into consideration when you're making that comparison, you take into consideration PERS and everything? We had a real struggle last time or in my former life, mm-hmm. that you never got the real full picture on personnel. And you say, yeah, we're going to hire that guy, but is that his full compensation package and what you're going to pay him after he leaves? Because that has a real effect on whether it's feasible to do this or not, to go to the private sector.
Everything in our cost accounting system has people built in at their fully burdened rates.
Okay.
Or are not being an accurate project cost.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Great. Let's go forward. Admin.
Yep. Well, it is under the contract.
Sure, it has been budgeted.
So it doesn't need necessarily to be moved forward. It's within the delegated authority.
Your recommendation is that it's a partners?
Correct, yes, management partners.
48.7?
Correct.
And I don't mind. I see a positive in moving it to the weekly business session for full board approval. I think it makes a lot of sense.
Under consent calendar? Or admin since it's budgeted and then
it's a consent calendar. Anyway.
Okay. We will do that. 2%. Thank you.
You three can work out who needs to pick anybody.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yes, Brian. And if you guys are getting paid, the lease will be open before end of the day tomorrow.
Okay.
I don't want to commit earlier, but
we saw that paper that we're moving right ahead of.
Yes.
Follow up with you.
It's Jack Reestown.
How long is it going to stay open?
So that's right. This one is more rocky material.
Yeah.
It'll go pretty good. It's not going to keep chasing on the last one.
Maybe we're getting down to bedrock.
Yeah, that's sick. Not in my lifetime.
Only so much of that hill can come down, right?
So hey, man. Item number 4B is approval of Title III SRS 2014 project application. Allocate additional funding to Firewise Communities existing project and grant agreement to the Oregon Department of Forestry and Firewise Communities program. But Mr. Smith Hall and Arthur O'Hare on this one.
Yes. So I do have a memo for this, and I think it was part of your packet, but I'm not sure. But because this was a late entry on the docket. But basically explaining the program, we have a Title III program. It was part of the SRS-funded program, so it was part of the Secure Rural Schools. And a portion of Secure Rural Schools money was dedicated to projects that benefited federal lands. So that's the Title III portion. It was, I believe, 8% of our allocation, SRS allocation. So the federal folks came back in 2012 with a very narrow definition of what these funds could be used for. So basically we have three projects we can use them for: Firewise Communities, Community Wildfire Protection Plan, and reimbursement of
search and rescue,
reimbursement of search and rescue costs during an event. So not in general, but just during an event we can. So given that narrow application of these funds, we currently have just one of those programs running, and that is Firewise. The board has authority to reallocate these Title III dollars to existing programs that have been approved before. Typically, Title III has to go through an advertisement and a public comment period, but the FireWise program has already gone through advertisement and the public comment period, so we can reallocate dollars to continue the funding for this existing program within the board's authority. So that's what I'm asking for today. Ms. Hall, our emergency services manager, is coordinating the Title III program, coordinating with these subcontractors.
She's taking this project on.
Yes.
Title III allocations to this FireWise community program have been going on for years, really a decade.
Yep.
And it's gone through various states of efficiency and being productive and coordinated effort. I've seen that with the Title II applications that we see. Title III gets 8% of our SRS funds. Title II gets 7%, so the allocation is a total of 15% of all SRS is allocated. Every county elects to do that every time at a 15%. That's a minimum level mandated by the SRS legislation. And so Ms. Hall has graciously volunteered. It's not in her wheelhouse. It's not her responsibility, but she sees real bang for the buck in how we're spending these finite dollars. We're not expecting any more of these, even if there is another extension of Secure Rural Schools, it'll probably be stripped to Title II and Title III and just have Title I, which is what we use for public safety, to getting the bang for the buck out of the last remaining dollars that we have. And so kind of bringing the partners together, picking out the ones that are most efficient in the practices of employing these FireWise fuel reduction, establishing FireWise communities. So, you know, you can see an uptick in the number of FireWise communities that we've had in the past, and they're coming on board, and it's spreading like wildfire, the idea that these are important things and steps to take advantage of. Her leadership and conjunction, even with our forestry department, ODF, our community partners, is only going to improve, I see, going forward in the coordinated effort. So it's going to be really good. It has to, you know, we've got to make some progress. These communities, like we saw out there in that Ken Rose area with that fire that was out there, they need to be taking some serious steps and have. I've been friends with people who live out there my whole life, and there's a lot of density that's developed in some of these communities over the years, and we don't want a weed situation here, so spending these dollars and setting up these communities, raising the awareness, I think makes a big difference.
I just have a couple questions about the information here. It says we have $1 million in Title III funds. Current year budget is $640,000, but we've spent $93,000.
Right.
So that doesn't correspond with adding $204,000. We've budgeted $640,000. How is that being spent? Or is the $204,000 related to that?
Right. The $204,000 would be within that $600,000. And the reason it's $204,000 is because that's what we're subcontracting with ODF to do. So this is allocating funds to the program, and then we will then have a contract with ODF to actually do the work. She's not going out there actually doing the work. I mean, she's not clearing brush and stuff. ODF will.
No, I understand that this is a contract with ODF,
right,
to do the work and
right,
clearing, and, you know, it's the wildland interface, you know, trying to protect
right,
homes to make themselves fire-wise so that their houses aren't lost if in a fire, but
right, right,
with the wildlands and all. So I'm familiar with the program. It's a matter of the numbers not adding up as far as, I guess I'm specifically trying to figure out, why are we allocating $204,000? We've only spent $93,000,
right,
budgeted $640,000, and have $1 million in the fund. So I need that broken out better for me to understand what's been spent, what's not
okay,
been spent, what are we allocating,
so over time,
spent.
Over time, we have received Title III dollars every year with the SRS payment. We have $1 million of Title III money sitting in the account. That $1 million is restricted
to those three
to these three programs, correct. So last March, you know, a year little or so ago, we anticipated that we would be spending up to $640,000 in this current fiscal year. That didn't occur. That did not happen. We had some transition with ODF, Brian retired, and changing of the guard. So ODF didn't spend as much as what they could have or what they were approved to spend. Their contract went through December 31. So through December 31, they've only spent the 90.
Out of the budgeted
600,000. Out of the budget. Well, we didn't give them 100% of that budget. I mean, the 640 reflects a potential piece to search and rescue, I believe 10,000. So in case there was an event and in case search and rescue actually went onto federal land, we had a portion of that 640 is potentially for their reimbursement. We had community wildfire that was still under operation, so the portion of that was to the community wildfire plan, and then a portion to the FireWise. So of the FireWise portion, only 91 was spent, basically, because we had some transition in personnel. I believe that was the time that County Forestry handed off the baton to Emergency Services.
So it was budgeted at $640,000, right. Didn't spend
that's
it.
That's just an estimate, yeah.
And the $204,000 is out of that correct. That we're allocating to be used and spent.
Yes.
So my next question is, Title III often funded our community corrections work crews for brush clearing and other things like that.
Correct.
How would that not still apply under the Community Wildfire Protection Plan as far as clearing and being a part of? To me, the labor of our work crews is potentially a lot cheaper, or is it more expensive than ODF?
It's not an eligible activity. The federal government says that you may not implement your community wildfire protection plan. You may write the plan, you may update the plan, but you may not implement it. And any fields work or any actions taken as described in the plan are considered implementation.
So why were we using Title III funds to fund it for the last 20 years?
Well, there's old Title III and new Title III.
Okay.
So under the old Title III, we had funds prior to the 2012 that we had received, and we were using those for search and rescue, for them to equip themselves, you know, offset their costs. We were using that for community for the work program, work crews. And that all stopped, not this year, but last year, because we ran out of old Title III money. New Title III money that we received since 2012 has been restricted to those three programs. The community work crew, interestingly enough, we touched bases with the regional advisory councils who are the keepers of Title II money. And I talked with Nate a bit, which he was going to talk with his work group coordinator. So it looks like we could use Title II funds for the work crew. So I think that what you're saying is going to happen.
Okay.
But it'll be through the regional advisory councils through Title II.
Through ODF.
Through ODF, not directly.
Yesterday about that as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's kind of neat. That's good news.
Because
they're in the same boat.
I mean,
they have these funds that are very narrowly defined of what you can use them for.
So. I think the at some point along the way, it'd be good to get reports on what project exactly this is accomplishing. What are we getting our bang for our buck on how much is being spent and how much how many neighborhoods are participating or communities within our interface areas. And just, this is something I would like to see regular reports on.
Sure.
Within the time frames of what is, obviously with 93,000, it's not utilizing the program to what it was meant to be doing. But you said there was a transition time.
Is that because of lack of application?
No. So we spent a lot of money in the past doing field work around homes, which was eligible under these new dollars. And we found that people weren't maintaining them. Even a year later, the crew would happen to drive by and go, wow, nobody really done anything. And so by just going out and doing for the communities, there was no buy-in back from them. And so
that's been my concern all along. It's like in my parents' place, it's every year. You go get it into a maintenance element, but the drones and stuff that just...
It could be a month later, it's overrun.
Yeah, at least once
one of the program requirements is not, it is that the program has to work towards getting the community to maintain their status, not just to achieve status, but to maintain their FireWise community status. That's the challenge.
It's interesting to hear you saying that we've done the work for the communities where the FireWise programs I was familiar with, the neighborhoods took them on and were part of doing the work, took the ownership on of, we're proud of this, receiving awards and recognition for doing it. So maybe we have to find a better way to partner with the communities that they're taking the ownership for the ongoing maintenance.
And I think that's what she was referring to. Yeah.
So it is, when you look at it, it's a smaller amount of money, but I believe that it's being used far more effectively. We actually now have the FireWise Committee, which is representatives from all of the different FireWise communities in Josephine County that meets monthly and strategizes about continued maintenance in our areas and how to recruit other folks if they want to staff a booth at the growers market. I mean, we're building all of this momentum, and we're using less money to do it. We're developing a cost share grant program with these dollars that will eventually run by legal counsel and then bring to you. We think it would be far more effective to sit down with a community, look at the plan that they have to write as part of becoming a FireWise community, that's called an action plan. And what it does is it assesses all of the hazards in their neighborhood, and then they decide what of those things needs to be done. We want to be able to bring some dollars to help that, but in partnership with them.
And how does this...
We're trying to work out details of exactly what that would look like, and it turns out we can't find anyone else that's ever done this program before. So,
how do we interface with rural? I mean, I think of Selma, Deer Creek, all these places that continue to get fires year after year. How do we address those? It's not just a neighborhood where you got 10 homes within a mile, you know, where you have miles of damage here. So how do we take this to rural?
We do. We're in rural all the time. We're well outside of city limits. We have a map that shows our FireWise communities. We have one going in into Kilma that's been a huge partnership program. Hasn't used any Title III dollars. It's actually done some stewardship and a number of federal grants. Working with the Ivy Collaborative out there to put that together.
But we're having fires in Selma every year, so that's...
We are, yes.
Where I think we need to find a way to meet that need.
We actually funded, through ODS, last year, we funded a part-time person at Ivy Fire that went out and did outreach, and there were no communities that were interested. So there was time.
I get real concerned with the government being the answer to everything. As Commissioner Moore said, well, we've got Selma. You know, what do? We dump dollars just so that everybody's safe here all the time? That can't happen.
And I don't think the program is supposed to stop fires.
No,
it's supposed to provide an opportunity for fire protection agencies to do something. So Mr. Krause's property, who, you know, there was a need for this program right around his house that would have, you know, fire station is 2 minutes away, but in 2 minutes, Chief Oak talks about how a fire doubles in size every 30 seconds. You got to provide some opportunity for the fire protection agencies to get there before your house is engulfed. And that's kind of what this is supposed to help provide those who cannot. It's morphed a lot over the last decade in what its focus really is. At the end of the day, I think it's really important that we look through the lens that these are federal dollars that have had further and further restrictions since 2008 about how and when and where we can spend them. There is not an anticipation that they're going to increase. We want to get the bang for the buck for the program that we have in the lifetime of this program, but hopefully establish these communities where they're self-sustaining, because money is not going to be there every year to come back and do these fuels reductions. It's to get these homeowners in a place where they can take care of themselves and educate them about what they need to be done, what needs to be done, and new homeowners, people moving in here from California or other parts of the country, they've never dealt with this kind of issue, and I think that's the focus of the program. I'm all about hearing more about on a regular basis, but at the same time, not exactly, you know, it's nice to do what we have, but after the money's gone, we're not going to be, this is not the government's long-term, we won't be in this program after.
Right.
No.
Well, I see, you know, we put money into clearing brush up from around houses and stuff, and then you come back 2 years later and right back where it was.
Yeah.
Did you actually educate the people on what you did or no?
And that's what FireWise is wanting to focus on,
exactly.
Is the education piece.
And the communities that we have that are established, that are participating, those communities are doing their work. They're having their FireWise Day every year, and they're not just doing work on their property. They're maintaining FireWise gardens. They're doing a lot of good work in the community.
I just don't want us duplicating. I mean, you say it's going to be at the growers market. I don't want us duplicating what the city's FireWise program is. I want to make sure that we're focusing on our communities. And they eliminated it?
Yeah.
Okay. But the other piece is also acknowledging where our hot spots in the county-wise. Where is our interfaces that, I mean, there's certain areas in Illinois Valley seems to be over and over. I mean, we've had some as far as Beacon Hill and around here that have some issues as well. But, I mean, it seems like there's evacuations more frequently.
FireWise is limited to the homeowner and to the, I think it's 100 to 200 feet
mm-hmm.
around the
yep.
the house
just
itself.
A big perimeter.
Right, just
mm-hmm.
the perimeter. So it is focused on that. And beyond that, we can't use FireWise dollars for anything beyond that ignition zone.
But we have Title II, and that's the partnership that we're looking at, an existing grant, and I'd like to apply. There's another period open. I'd like to apply for Title II as well. What that's going to allow us to do is more of a holistic treatment. So we're able to offer some additional assistance either to existing FireWise communities or as communities are forming, especially ones that are adjacent to large tracts of BLM land. They often say, why should we do anything? Nobody else is. We have dollars we can put on the ground around your communities while you guys are working in your communities and we're assisting you in that process.
What's available through Title II? I mean, is there a dollar amount that they have available? Or do you just apply and if it's there and they...
The county doesn't do anything with Title II. That's under the Regional Advisory Council.
The Forest Service that administers that. I'm the local state government representative representing Herman Bertschager. Former Commissioner Walker's on that advisory committee. That's a Forest Service one. There's a BLM RAC as well. I'm not on the BLM RAC, but they've appropriated their funds from last year in those projects, and they haven't gotten the final list to me yet on those. I don't believe the county had any interactions with the BLM Title II.
So Soil and Water had a grant through them, a Title II grant, and they have graciously allowed ODF to take that grant over due to some staffing changes. And so we have just over $100,000, and that's the Title II we've been talking about potentially using the Community Justice Crew to help us accomplish. So that's already an approved application for this project. In addition, there's almost $550,000, Joe's fee is $207,000, available in the application period right now through the Forest Service Title II. And either us or ODF are looking at putting in another application for additional dollars for the same type of project, which again is treating outside of that 1 to 200 buffer around the home.
How do we make sure we don't miss that window for applying? Who's overseeing that application?
I am.
Okay.
But we're letting... It would be more efficient if ODF had the capacity to do it, to have them apply. And so Tyler Abert, who is the FireWise person there that this contract is for, is working with his folks at ODF to see if they will take this on in addition to the one that they're just picking up from Soil and Water. If they won't, I will write the grant and submit it and oversee it.
Okay.
We would love to come do a presentation to you guys sometime about FireWise. I mean, even bring some of the members of FireWise communities if that is of interest to you.
I'm familiar enough with it that I don't need a presentation. It's just a matter of, I think I'd rather report on what's been done.
Did I hear you say that the city's FireWise program disbanded?
It didn't. So Bob Schumacher retired, and we didn't have a good candidate to plug into that position. It takes the right person, and if you don't have the right person, then the program isn't effective. So the way that we're working it now is in partnership with the city, the folks at ODF cover the entire county. They cover Selma, they cover Cape Junction, they cover Wilderville, Gray Creek. They cover everywhere. And it's effective.
I think we can, if you guys have questions, Paul would be happy to explain them to you. But maybe we're
good. I'm all right with moving forward to
great
funding request.
We're going to have a little bit of a challenge. Obligating is what we have to be. That's what we're responsible for doing for these funds. And we've got some time frames to work on that. There's a small chance that we may have to go out and go through the advertising process. It's pretty extensive to look for other opportunities to spend these Title III funds, but we may do that. It's going to be something I think we work out through the budget cycle in the next couple of months.
Does the remaining funds in there, do they have a shelf life?
They do, yes.
And what is that? I mean, do we have to go over 2 years or 5 years? Or?
Right. We have to have the programs identified by September of this year, 17, and we have to have the remaining funds obligated by September of 18. So identifying the programs means we've got the FireWise program through emergency services. If we go out and advertise, then maybe we have another community wildfire protection plan through some other provider. And basically, those are the two options you have, FireWise and CWPP.
We have talked about another option that I can't remember what it was, but I was thinking about. It's a real strict guideline of how you can spend those Title
right.
III, and I think it had something to do with some planning that we were talking about.
But it could be under the CWPP, Community Wildfire Protection Plan umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's, yeah, that would need to be the advertisement.
I didn't tell you, I wish I would have, because I think I forgot what that was.
You did tell me.
Okay.
Glad, because he would have forgotten.
Yeah, I don't know. I have these ideas, and then I
leave it. So we get the programs by this September, and then we obligate the funds by next September.
And I urge us to have the programs in line so we don't leave any money on the table for September.
Correct.
Really
our goal is to not send it back to the Fed.
Well, if push comes to shove, FireWise can utilize the entire $1 million. There's no, once you have the funds obligated, there's no time frame in having to spend them.
Okay.
So I don't have to spend it by the 18th, by September 18th. We can parcel it out over the next couple of years, but we can only parcel it out to the identified program.
Wherever we might
get obligated. Okay.
Yeah. Sure wish that these were 2008
Title
III
funds. I'll get a T3 budget. Title budget preview. I've got it.
Okay.
My version here has some notes on it. So I'll
broad scope of how you can use those. And so we use those funds to fund our community corrections crews to do all sorts of positive things. Yeah. Fuels reduction, Granite Hill Cemetery maintenance, all sorts of stuff. We don't have those funds.
Not anymore. Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah,
it's helpful.
Okay.
So do I need to say anything about the contract, or is that all just together?
Okay. Moving forward.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Consent.
It's an extension of a previous agreement, so consent calendar, in my opinion.
And then we'll speak to
either myself or Ms. Paul.
Nepal will be important.
I'll speak to
it. Can you call in? No, I'm just kidding.
That's real important. Okay.
Well, thank you. I have just two quick informational pieces for you.
Thank
you. Thanks. We are currently sent out a request for proposal for audit services. The current auditor has reached the end of his contract. And so, with this last year's audit, the 2016 audit, and
the budget, finance audit, or what?
Yeah, the countywide audit, the CPA, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, countywide audit. And so, we're going out to bid for a new auditor. And so that
didn't go real well for us last time. The last auditor kind of botched it. The one
two years ago. Him reapplying.
Well,
not them. This guy we've had for 4 or 5 of the 6 years that I've been here,
mm-hmm.
and comes in on time, on budget.
Yeah, yeah.
Very thorough. And multiple times here.
Yes, he's eligible to rebid. I personally see value in having different auditors because they come in with their own focus, their own area of expertise and things.
You change your tax preparers every once in a while.
Our goal is every we have a 3-year contract for an auditor, ideally. This last one wasn't 3 years because he was bringing up the rear on a contract that had gone defunct. So we went back to him because he'd been our contractor before and he knew it and he could get us through. We've got requirements of filing at the state. If the last contractor, we were behind the eight ball on that and didn't get it done in a timely fashion, made us look bad. So yeah. we're going to go back out and give it another shot and find somebody, hopefully, that can do the job.
Yeah. And we've got several people that are Moss Adams, so several folks that are interested. So I think we'll have a good bid on that. So just to let you know, that's going on right now. And then when that comes in and we do the evaluation, we'll bring it back to the board for your review. And
that approval. Usually costs us right around 40?
Yeah, it's been 40 to 50. But with inflation and this is a new audit, I don't know. We'll see. It could be 50, 55. I don't know.
Everything costs $50,000.
Yeah, it seems like it. That's
just
the new
ridiculous
standard. And then just for you to bring it back to the board, last week I was saying that we would have the dues request, payment request for RV COG, and I think the board was interested in either discussing this or waiting to see if something occurred. Or
there was some hesitation, some need for clarification on, I'm fine with moving forward. But if there was things that you guys went to an RV COG event and maybe got some clarity there on their services for the county. I don't know if it went said specifically for the $17,500 that we planned on.
It's the same price for the last 3 years. They have not raised the dues.
I thought the whole level was making sure the other issue was taken care of first.
It's true.
That's why we had requested the hold on to this. And I don't know where the status of that issue is.
Caballero was interested in coming in and having a conversation with the board about that timeline. So if that's something you guys are
That's fine. It probably would be a good thing to have that discussion.
Okay.
So we'll
hold off.
Yeah, but that's what we were waiting on that on was making sure our other issue was...
Great.
Perfect. That's what all I have.
I'll reach out to him and tell him that that's what we're going to do.
Okay.
Thank you.
Are there other membership things that we need to...
Overall, there's nothing pending for this year.
Okay. Great. Okay. Board business. We have resolution 2017-006 in the matter of an appointment to the Josephine County Board of Health. Mrs. Tyler. From the city, new councilor who's going to be the liaison to that. And if there's no objection,
considering he was a pharmacist forever, I think it's probably the right fit as far as the city councilors. But
worked pretty well.
He went to the meeting last week too, so he's already attending.
Great. There's another one that didn't quite make it on, I think, and that's probably my fault for the delay in providing my ratings on the fair board appointments. We have 4 opportunities there for reappointment or appointment, and so the scoring has been accomplished, and so we have Mr. Shepard for a reappointment, Patty Kirkman for a reappointment, Lonnie Johnson for an appointment.
And new appointment on Lonnie.
Yeah, new appointment on Lonnie, and Linda Bradley has a reappointment.
So we had 5 applicants that I think would do a fine job, and unfortunately only had 4 openings. But this circumstance brought up to me a need for us to maybe reevaluate how we do our board appointments. To me, the fact that we each individually rate and we get to this process without having any discussion is curious to me.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I think one of the beneficial parts would have the liaison have an opportunity to speak to or the what kind of reports from the manager. And you know, for me, I made a point to call the chair and try to vet out stuff, but I don't necessarily know that it's the most efficient thing for us to rate without having any opportunity to discuss or get feedback from the liaisons. And I don't know what the new process would look like exactly.
We're happy. I'm happy to take a look at it. I don't know about efficiency, but as far as thoroughness, you might be right. We might be able to do a more thorough process. But and there is an opportunity and a thing to say, no, I would like to interview this person, and that would be, you know, the person's brought in, we spent a couple of minutes with the full board and that sort of deal.
I had marked that on a couple.
Oh, okay.
And on a different...
on a different one, and that didn't happen?
It didn't happen.
Okay.
And so it appeared that...
I don't know how that works.
We just rate and it goes, regardless of. So
if there's two of you that are interested in interviewing, then we'll usually bring them in.
That makes sense.
It's two.
Otherwise, the interview won't be done.
Then we won't.
Got it. So, and without having any feedback or discussion, I know that on the last one, if I didn't remember, hey, who did I even rank? And all of a sudden, we're seeing, and were those the same names? So, to me, this is a very odd way of doing things, and it's a very. I don't know. It's just different. So
you're saying there might be a better way to do things.
I'm thinking there could be.
There probably is. So I don't know how many advisory boards we have. This one took a month or more. My thing is that we have a million things to do. And getting this right, I want to definitely do and dedicate some time. So if you've got a proposed, you know, better process for it, I totally want to see it. At the same time, I don't want to get mired down with picking on who and who shouldn't. Just because they're on the board doesn't mean they don't have an opportunity to provide input or attend these meetings. You know, for me, the Fair Board is probably our second most important next to the Rural Planning Commission, so I want to get it right.
I should advise you guys that I have, as liaison, had received some complaints on another Fair Board member from multiple sources. I have initiated trying to contact that Fair Board member to try to set up a meeting to discuss whether or not it's appropriate for them to continue on the Fair Board. To me, some of them are some egregious issues that would maybe not be most representative of what we'd want on a volunteer. I have not heard back from that individual yet, so I'm kind of at a point of trying to, as liaison, address it and see if I can.
So I've only had to do, I think, this one other time and bring that to the board and say, I've reached out, I've done something similar. It hasn't been met with a positive response, and you can bring that to the board. All of these people, Planning Commission included, they really serve at the pleasure of the board and from the intent of what we're looking for them for advice. They need to be representing the county and that and their professional sense really well. And if that's not going real well and there isn't progress being made or there's egregious things that really can't be rectified, we just say thank you very much for your service, and we need to figure out a different way to...
Going back to some of our training, how do you go about that? What's the process? Because you have to bring them in and you...
No.
You know,
no, they're not staff.
They're not staff. Okay. They're
staff. In order to have an evaluation, that takes a process, and HR can
put those... volunteers.
These are volunteers. If there's something...
Do you have to give them a reason why? Not at all? Just say this isn't working out?
Yep.
If I don't hear back from this person by next week, I will probably be initiating that process.
And does that have to be ratified by the board?
She doesn't have the authority unless we grant her authority.
We as a board appointed, we as a board would have to unappoint.
Okay. And I don't know that I'd delegate that. I'd want to hear what it is.
But
I mean, there are things that I could see that are just like, nope, that's not working out. You're going to have to, you can't be in that position anymore. The Fair Board is an interesting one. It's different than the Rural Planning Commission. They're bonded. They have actual liability, and the decisions that they make are statutorily regarded, you know, state statute. It's governing the fair. So there's a higher level of expectation than a parks board, a bike, you know, pedestrian, the tree.
Advisory.
This is different. So.
Well, if we have a problem there, and I'll leave that up to Commissioner Morgan. Every one of those people out there, volunteers alike, they're all ambassadors for the county because it's the county fair. Anything that ties the string back to the county, we've got to be real careful with.
I've always tried. So it's tough. I think Rural Planning Commission members are in the fair are the ones where they don't always understand what they're supposed to be. They're charged with, and I can see
rural planning commission members in the past have kind of erred in the side of legislation, whereas they're a review body, and they're not supposed to be enacting policies that are outside of, you know, bringing those kinds of things. They've got a very clear criteria that they're supposed to be evaluating, and sometimes their personal opinion is not exactly what they're supposed to be bringing to the table. And it's always been really well, you know, I've just had coffee with them and said, this is where I see this position. And you can disagree, but, you know, we'll figure it out. So hopefully you can find resolve in that. But as a last resort, we can definitely make that decision.
Regarding the current ones, I'm okay with going forward with those.
That was my next question. None of these are on your list?
No.
Okay.
Great. We'll be moving those forward. I kind of skipped over other board business. So is there anything that you guys have?
I wanted to have our RFP process kind of, I've received concern from a couple of different departments regarding trying to get a contractor hired for work not really getting through BOM very quickly. And so I spoke with Mr. Johnson as far as what is he looking at. He mentioned that they are just trying to make sure that there's proper insurance bonding and all that other kind of stuff. Well, to me, the simple way of addressing that is put it in every RFP. Must provide as part of your application proof of insurance bonding and stuff like that. And if it's presented up front, that's vetted. You know, if they have that documentation, it shouldn't be something that could be tied up indefinitely at BOM. If we have a standard established, then we document that up front in an RFP process and it's done. But I would like us to look at that to try to...
I haven't seen an RFP go out that doesn't have this kind of requirement.
Well,
you have to meet those minimums.
And that's what made me curious, because I saw it in the course one. It was in there. So if it's already in there, then why is there the holdup? And so
I imagine it isn't the holdup. There's something else holding it up.
But that's what's been described. So I think that's something that it might be.
Sometimes they use that as an excuse.
Yeah.
But it's not really the truth. Because that would be a pretty easy one. We don't have an RFP that goes out that you don't have minimum insurance requirements. Your license bonded and insured.
Sure.
Stuff, so.
Well, and I think maybe the difference of wording is saying you must have it versus provide proof as part of your application. And then it's there to be vetted quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And so versus the time to, well, I need to make sure these are all there. Well, if they're provided.
You don't put out an RFP for something. Yeah, other than maybe the...
I've had other... Some of my departments have put them out and then found that the county has an approved contractor list or not. And so in asking about that, what creates an approval? Well, it's just these items. Okay. Then if these are provided and they have them, there's a state contractors board. What's the process of getting on an approved contractor's list or not?
I'm confused why a department is going out and getting a contractor. I don't have a... I can't see and...
They're working in coordination with BOM.
Okay.
But they're having issues. And so I'm trying to think of ways that we can...
Can you tell me what department this is? Or?
Biggest one is Fairgrounds right now.
Fairgrounds is an issue.
And as far as... trying to get contractors willing to apply.
They can't get their own, because they're not exactly, and we need to talk about how they're included in BOM. They're paying a flat rate. They haven't been paying in the past, so none of their facilities are really in the depreciation schedules, part of the facilities reserve, all that stuff. But let's put that on for
an agenda talking about that.
Yeah.
And then
it's complicated. We try to bring them into the fold, but they frankly can't afford to be in the fold. And so it's the intermediary, Ryan providing, you know, some service, but not everything.
So I had a list, so do you...
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to make sure I don't interrupt you if you need some too. Not that you don't.
I've got one, but you go ahead.
Okay, so... on the radio the other day, there was some liaison comments that might need to be adjusted and changed. And so I was going to make a recommendation with the changes in the North Valley Merlin sewer district that instead of me being the liaison for that it would be you, because it seems like Public Works. Actually, that would be you.
Thanks. Well, go ahead. I'm listening.
Yeah. Well, on the radio you said your liaison... I had been assigned liaison, and
I'm
I've got
sorry,
a report from Rob.
understood.
No, it's okay, but when I got a report from Rob that's public works related to the sewer, for me, when I was advocating for that, I was seeing as a connection to the airport, the economic development and all that up there. Right now, we got a project that's specifically public works related and other stuff like that. So I just thought we maybe want to talk about it again.
I think it's a great thing to talk about because I see it through the lens of economic development. The driver of that is economic development.
Okay.
Public works is an ancillary element of their facilitator.
It would be a public works project, but the recipient of the benefit is going to be economic development.
Yeah, and airports is a tangential beneficiary. In fact, they weren't even included in the last study initially.
Public works is just going to be who does the work and lines up the project, and that's it.
I don't even see them doing that. In my opinion, I've wanted to pull public works out of this forever. They've never built a sewer system.
Nope.
To have somebody do that just because it's public works sounds good from a municipal standpoint, but they don't know what they're doing.
Realistically, they'd say, what do you think about that sewer system? I have no clue. I'm not about ready to go to sewer system college.
And Robert tried and done really well to kind of play in the role because there really isn't anywhere else to put it. Other than in a project manager that built sewer systems before. And I've advocated for that for 6 years. Because nothing has really happened but more studies. And not even in very sequential timelines of why didn't you have airports included in the beginning of that?
They have to be.
I asked them to be.
Yeah.
And 8 months later, at the end of, it's 85%, I have an email from Rob, it's 85% done. Let's conclude airport for an extra $20,000 at the end, change order on the contract, set it back. I still haven't seen the report. It's 85% done back in August, September. It's just not the way things get done. I keep going back, hire a project manager, and Rob can provide input, but he's not leading the charge on this. He's got his own wheelhouse that needs attention. So I totally welcome the conversation. That's the direction that I would propose, have proposed. Do you guys want to do something different?
Well, I think we need to get together and put out a clear message as to how we want this to proceed. Because if we don't, it's not going
to
get done.
Okay, so that needs to be on the agenda as well.
And kind of bring us up to speed on where we're at and where we can go.
Before we get to lay down that project.
I'm sure Rob knows the limits of what his...
And let's include Larry in that conversation and anybody else who needs to be.
So then...
with a clear direction when we come out of it. But
kind of on the liaison role, when we had the discussion about who should be liaison to state, fed, local... really didn't. I don't think I thoroughly thought out what that implications would be. I through the process of the liaison list, have realized that there's a couple things I'm assigned to that are non-existent anymore.
Very
One of them, there's an attempt to get it going, and I've made some contact with some folks that haven't received information back, but had a meeting with a couple citizens yesterday that are wanting to make sure our Josephine County CERT program gets reestablished. It's kind of been defunct since 2012, and we have the Josephine County Citizen Corps Council that is in existence but not in existence since several people have moved away. So, and the emergency management one are kind of not really there. So, with that, as I started hearing Commissioner DeYoung talking about all the local liaisons, I realized that there's so much on his plate that he could, as a full-time job, just be liaising, or whatever the right word is, to liaison. Yeah, City Council, Grants Pass, Cave Junction, School District 7, Three Rivers, RCC, Irrigation District, all these meetings and everything that could potentially be. Do we want to have that all on his shoulders? Do we want to split that up? I just thought, I don't know. I was just kind of looking at balance, and I wanted to see, do we need to look at anything else for balance?
Let's get the liaison list out, and we'll go over it again.
Okay, so maybe that could be put on the agenda as well.
This may even be too soon, because, number one, I haven't got the list. You wouldn't know if you said, well, I'll take Cave Junction. We have no idea when Cave Junction meets. I think we need to make a list as to what all the requirements are of those different
we have not covered irrigation districts except for those situations when they come up. We have not covered the school districts except when there are issues. So
I didn't realize that would all be there.
Starting a course that's broader, I'd like for you guys to define, and then we'll assign the staff to say, can you find when Cave Junction? We haven't gone to Cave Junction meetings.
Right.
I think it's a good idea to do so. I don't disagree. And if I were to help prioritize, I'd say cover the municipals first, and then there's an education component when we're in the queue or there's something that affects us.
Well, I didn't maybe get down to be something as simple as you fire a letter off to the Josephine County School District or Three Rivers and say, you know, we've assigned a liaison to you.
Yeah.
Here's your contact
point.
Right?
Contact. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
You know, and go from there, you know, something of that sort.
If you
see something on your agenda you think is of interest to the county, Board of County Commissioners, we'll be glad to attend your meeting.
Sounds great.
Well, and I didn't know, do we want to break it down into education pulled out of local context or jurisdictions? I just thought, let's have the conversation again. So that can be on there.
Well, I know out in Cape Junction, their school district up there is very strong.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if where they, you know, they're getting the attention that they could probably get. So, you know, I think the school district, because, you know, you're talking, there's so much pointed at youth and how you're going to steer them into the future. I guess a good way to put that, and by either indoctrination or whatever, indoctrination, whatever you want to call it, but I think that I would rather see more involvement with the school districts than less, and even if we maybe decide just a letter so you don't have to drive out there to attend the school board meeting,
mm-hmm.
but that they say, you know, we have something we think is of interest to the county, or the county commission.
Yeah. The other piece that was officially asked when we had our quarterly meeting out there was, for whatever reason, we picked the second Monday of the month, which is the same week as our evening board meeting, so that gives us two evening meetings in the week. But it also is the same night that Cape Junction has they meet as a city council the second and fourth Mondays of the month. So here they have an opportunity that their citizens are gathered, and then they have to leave to go have a meeting, and their citizens are pulled between two meetings. And they asked if we would consider meeting on a different Monday of the month, either first or third, with them on that quarterly.
Yeah, so that they only had to come out two evenings a month as opposed to, you know, now you're asking for three.
And the current newly elected are interested in having it separated so they also can hear from their folks at the same time we are, so we can have things combined. So there was a request to ask us to consider at least seeing if first or third would work better for those quarterly, and if we needed more often meetings, if things came up that we needed to, so that we're not...
In the past, with different counselors, we were meeting, that was years ago, monthly. There really wasn't anything that was, I mean, it was the same, the solid waste challenge that they were having, with doing something with their solid waste that they need to do something with on the Ruby landfill. Just a few issues that were never really, there wasn't a whole lot there.
Could we have a quarterly joint meeting with them?
Currently quarterly.
Okay.
But
like the other night, we had a half an hour with them, and then they were all pulled away to go to their actual meeting.
And that's why they asked us to not do that quarterly.
The crowd between two buildings.
A lot of times.
If they have splitting the crowd and making, well, I've got to stay here. No, I want to go over there. Put both entities in the same room for once a quarter, and then the public can go to one.
Oh,
place.
I see.
Yeah, just have a joint BCC and council meeting, and the public shows up for that. They have something for the county, that's fine. They have something for the city. The city just maybe shows something that they maybe had for their general business and leans more towards county issues at the time for that one meeting out of four meetings a year.
So I think at least having the conversation, seeing if we can reach out to them and see what would best meet the needs.
Yeah, I'm open to whatever it is that, you know, I think
we need to check with our council. I think they're going to have a fourth member coming this week.
That's how we discussed it differently.
If you wanted to work, Dan, with the city of Cape Junction, and even Grand Staff about how and when we're going to meet, that sounds great.
Yeah, okay, we'll work something out.
And then the last thing is, I know there's some discussion about us doing a COOP continuation of services kind of thing, but I think separately that we need to still establish is level of services and defining essential level of services, and it's still kind of related to that COOP.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't want to see that drop off the radar that we are establishing what our minimum levels of service required for emergencies or days where something happens?
From the planning side, I've had two inquiries lately about road plugs and the application for road plug, what do you call that, a vacation or something of a road plug. Seems to me, I've just been finding out what road plugs are all about. If you have if the road plug thing is in existence, both of these people applied for a permit for a business. They can't get an address because the road plug isn't listed, so therefore they can't get electricity because they don't have an address. And both of them are in the 14-month approval cycle. And I'm
sitting over there.
And I've tried to find out what, and there's planning. There's planning, public works, and legal all involved. Find out.
Everybody's not pointing the finger at everybody else, but the roads.
Yeah.
That's.
And I've traced it down. But here's what, and I'll just throw this out because we had to do this over across the pond, is that when an application is submitted, that there's a time frame that it's either approved or disapproved,
right,
so that people can move on.
Yeah.
So the private sector can move on. We've had it over north of here, and what it amounted to is we had staff members that either they just couldn't get to it or whatever. And we put a 30-day on there, I think. We put a 30-day on it. You applied, and you had no, and you can do it 30, 60, 90, I don't care. But if you didn't get an answer back for that, it was automatic approval. Period. That was the end of that. And that really stopped a lot. And I know we have some issues with planning, from the outside, public comment. And anything we do to try to straighten these things out, that was one of them. If I get two of them in my first 3 weeks here, I kind of think that maybe that how many else are out there, how many road plugs are sitting around that they're not high on the priority list, but what does it take to do that?
Transfers on Granite Hill Cemetery plots, it's any number of things. If there's an excuse as to why a contract didn't go through legal, because if you want it to go through there, it's just...
Well, this one gentleman was in the other day, he paid $6,750 to the state of Oregon for his license, and that was a year ago. Now he's getting ready to pay it again, so he's $13,000 into this thing, and he still doesn't have an address. And he doesn't have an address because of what's happening inside this building. So, that concerns me.
I don't know what the answer is.
I don't either.
And I don't know if the board has... I mean, we do have the authority. Probably just grant that and say that's what we're going to do. It's been a challenge, and I don't know that there's never going to be in all government, there's never going to be enough staff, there's never going to be enough time, there's never going to be enough this. So you got to make things more efficient, and that's the way it goes.
Well, I guess probably the thing I should do is walk over legal and find out why they're in it. What is your part of the process entail?
Yeah. I endorse the idea that we understand more about what happens over there in that office. The legal counsel has rarely endorsed that idea. So, I don't know. It's one of those things this board is going to have to take some time and digest and come up with a plan. I've asked her, what are all the projects that you're working on? Because I do hear of things that, in my opinion, they're not the priority. And I'll just give you my philosophy. We're the only person in this county who can say, no, that's not what we're doing. And I don't have any problem as the liaison to the assessor's office telling Connie, that's a really good question that you're asking. But relative to the other things that are coming before legal, it's not the question they're going to answer today. They're going to answer that later when they get a chance. But right now, Wally's making that decision. I don't think he doesn't have the authority to do that, in my opinion. And if he wants it all on his own, I don't know how that works, because that's not how I see my role as the administrators. And I don't know if you see it that way, but we got to project manage, facilitate these things, because there's only so much resources. And I think they're doing a good job, but it'll never end. All the questions that come to them, and I want you to research this, and planning's asking them, and public works, and everybody's doing it. Field, sheriff's department, DA, everybody's doing it. But nobody's saying, nope, that's important, that's not. This isn't,
Well, I just think along, you know, like I said, an application for a road plug removal.
Well, somebody's making the decision that that's not important.
That's not a big deal.
Transfers for the Granite Hill Cemetery B plug.
Yeah.
Not important.
Nope.
Okay, that's fine. But let's give Sarah some backing and authority. And I did this last year. I said, you try, and you give them 30 days. And after 30 days, you develop your own deed transfer program, one-page project. And so she did. She looked at two other counties, Jackson counties and one others, and said, this is the form that they use for cemetery plot deed transfers, and picked the stuff that needed to be in there, stuff that doesn't, read the state statutes, did it, 45 minutes, and done.
Recorded.
People doing it for, I think it was for 2 years for deed transfer. Done. And they have come. Nothing against legal, but they've gone through two iterations of proposed. They handed one out and said, oops, nope, that one's not quite right. And I don't know why, you know. But it had been a long time. And it's not.
Well, maybe if they're overwhelmed over there, what can we ask Wally if there's something that, you know, we could change, like changing deed plots at Granite Hill? That somebody else could take that on, and he didn't have to worry about it from here. Road plug, for instance, you know, what's his
totally possible
expertise?
I don't know.
You know, I don't need to do this.
I don't know what they're working on. Yeah. First, I need to find out what they're working on. Then I can say, okay, it looks like these things we can have a contract on staff, an attorney on retainer to review contracts. Maybe that's what we should have, as opposed to sending stuff over to legal. And it's just, this is their priority. This is what the board wants you to focus on. And this land use stuff, you know, we hear all the time about these egregious violations. I haven't seen one of those cases come before the board for approval to move through the judicial process in a long time, in a little while. So if there's 6 or 8 or 10 of these sitting out there, why aren't they coming before the board? That would be a priority. We've never had an opportunity to look at all the scope and projects and what's going to that office and help prioritize. I have never, nothing against Mr. Rich. He wasn't willing to provide. And they have a list. They know everything.
Well, like I said, I got two road plugs out there that are holding up business and holding up.
I would recommend you go over and talk to them.
I'm going to go over. I have to go over.
Maybe we do develop a process that this is the time frame that's appropriate.
Maybe it's something as you say, we contract out for a paralegal to do that or something.
Or
to write that up and
or,
type it up and
you know,
it
the
on
extreme is that everything going to legal from the county will come through this board's office. So Wendy will record everything that goes through here and over there, and we'll know when it comes in, and we'll assign the prioritization. You know, the liaison will do it. Whatever. I don't know.
Well,
that seems
micromanaging. There's also something, too, that we have an elected official that is over a department. So I totally hear you as the administrator.
Yeah.
So we need to find a way to negotiate and balance this that we're... Oh, sorry. Get me a hit. Just honoring,
totally.
You know, and respecting that he is elected. So.
And the question may be to say, what is a reasonable time to get a road plug through? Just take that particular thing. Say, road plugs are going to go through in 60 days, and if they don't, they're automatically approved.
Well, for legal defense...
Yeah.
Not every 60 days is the same, you know.
Well, I know that.
But now we're talking about...
If you don't, you have to be clear about your intent of what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
And just saying, well, I don't know what you're doing over here, I don't think that's clear. I think we need to have some sort of guidelines for them to follow.
And I want to be real clear, because legal may listen to this, and they probably will. I'm not asking them to work harder.
No.
I'm not asking you to stay till midnight
no.
to do this. But I am asking that you give the board an opportunity to weigh in and say, these are the things that we have deemed as a priority. And we, by the responsibility and the charter and everything else, that's our job, is to set priorities. We're responsible for doing it. The budget is the greatest example. And I think it just starts there. For good or bad, if you want somebody else to prioritize, that's great. Figure out in the system where that person's supposed to be.
Well, I'd like to approach saying, how can we help you get that job done in a reasonable amount of time?
Asking
if
you
they
to
throw
work
up something that, you know, okay, this is why I don't do those, then just say, do you have an alternative? Because
right.
We've got to get them done. I mean, the key is to me, an excuse is I'm so busy I can't get to them, so therefore I don't care about that guy's road plug.
And we shouldn't.
His road plug to him is as important as anything else is to you and I.
Right.
So, you know, looking at it from their standpoint.
Or if he knew we weren't going to do road plug vacations, we just don't have staff to do that.
Yep.
Then he wouldn't have paid his $6,700 or whatever. If he knew that out front.
And if he's having to pay it twice, that's on us.
He's paying that to the state. He's not paying that here.
I know.
None of that money we've back to here. No. To help us do with the road plugs, deal with the road plugs. But
just wanna, it's not just in public work. It's in every department's got challenges in that situation. I think it's our number one administrative challenge. So that's just, and I don't know how to solve it. And I think legal's doing a great job. They're overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how to, they've got more staff than they've ever had since I've been in office. It's just not, it's not enough. It's not enough. So I don't know how to help. Well, I do. I do know how to help. I just wish I had the opportunity. Anything else? You had Liz? Yours was the street plug?
Fine.
I have a couple of things I want to pursue. I want to get it in the queue early because I'm leaving for D.C. in 3 weeks, and I want to have the package ready to go for what I want to do is four opportunities to do a land trade or exchange with the federal, that's all BLM-focused properties. And so Mike Watson's putting together that package of all of those different properties, their specific land survey, all that stuff, all of the things that we need. There's a,
you mentioned it last year.
Yeah. I don't know what it looks like to have the authority from the board to go try to figure out, you know, Lane County has a lobbyist on staff that does our state and federal lobbying. We don't have anybody, but we've got ONC has a lobbyist back there in D.C., and Jay is the main guy, but this other guy, Cy, he was the Federal Forest Service Director for a while. And he told me when I was back there in November that he would be happy to help work on, you know, these transfers. I've tried to work with DeFazio's office, and they're very willing. They haven't done any of these transfers. Walton's office has done quite a few and said they're happy to help. But they need somebody to carry to do the administrative stuff for them. I don't know how to do it. You know, I'm just going to get the paperwork. My goal is to get the paperwork to this guy, Cy. Say, Cy, what it takes to get this done through Walton's office, here you go. These are the properties that I'm willing to trade. These are the properties that I want to acquire. Make it happen for me and send me the bill. You know, we're talking about maybe millions of dollars worth of property. $1 million worth of property, I bet. I know which ones there are. We're outlining the ones that we're willing to give up. The board is going to approve all of that before it goes. But just to be able to talk with Cy and say, yeah, the board is behind engaging your services to try to facilitate these properties through. And if we can get these four, which I told you what they are before, but I'll do it again, the Fog Creek Boat Ramp, the parking area, Wildlife Images Parking, because they've been working on that contract of renewing their lease for a decade. They can't get it done, and it's such an asset. Applegate Seed Orchard, BLM's looking to divest themselves of that, and White Horse Boat Ramp. That one I'm not 100% sure on, but I'm going to go for it, and we'll see how it shakes out. We have a piece of property in the Illinois Valley on the Illinois River that the BLM wants to acquire for ecological and habitat reasons. Great. I don't expect us to ever put a park out there. That sounds really challenging. There's another couple pieces of property. There's one around the Galise Community Center. We own about 80 acres all around. We own the Galise, but we also own the forestry tract around that. It goes right down to the river. I don't expect us to ever manage that for forestry purposes. It'd be a really challenging area to do that in. Let's give it to the BLM, you know, for an exchange of one of these properties. And outlining a couple other maybe forestry tracts that have ecological benefits, but we could divest ourselves.
I like
that's what I want to.
The Galise thing, how would that affect the people in Galise? Do they all of a sudden get BLM going and say, we've got to paint your houses?
No, I don't think so. Well, the community center is probably grandfathered in under that statute. It's already compliant, and they've got like $1 a year, $99. They take good care of it. Ryan does an annual inspection. That one's fine. It shouldn't impact. And that would not be what we would include in giving over to the BLM. They might be a better partner for developing trails, having resources to do those kinds of things around the Galise. I don't know. But I don't see a negative to the...
I guess regarding the lobbyist, I would want to see a price tag.
Yeah, I don't... All that would come back to you, but I want the authority to kind of say, we're going to start working on this, and Cy's not going to put together a package of proposal and it just say, you know, if it's $5,000 of a transaction, that seems, you know, for the Applegate Sea Orchard, sure. The revenue that we lose on the Hog Creek boat ramp every year, you pay for it one year, a couple of months in the summertime, and just being able to have like ownership, you know, these are the wildlife images. That doesn't have any value to the county specifically, other than being able to, you know, long term say yes, go forth and do what you've been doing for two decades there, perpetuity. I don't know that I want a revenue stream out of that from wildlife images. I just want them to be able to continue to do what they're doing.
Well, we need a voice back there in Washington, and it's obvious, you know, you go back and forth back there all the time. So if you're comfortable with Cy, I don't know.
In his connection with Walden Brothers.
Mr. Morgan, as far as, you know, seeing a price tag.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would, oh, no, it's $100,000.
I don't think that's his expectation. And Cy might be high. I have no idea. He might even do it as part of his ONC. Yeah, I don't know. Those are big issues for me, to getting those transferred, and that would help our programs tremendously. So, I don't think they're necessarily contentious with the BLM. In fact, they're probably a headache for them. They'd probably be happy to get rid of wildlife images. Who knows?
BLM probably doesn't know how to spell wildlife images. We're out here on the West Coast. They don't care about it.
They may not care about it. That was one. I think we need to really put on the calendar for a cannabis committee talking about that.
Yes.
Some time talking to a couple of people after the hearing on Monday about what that might look like. My strategy would be that we'd just reflect kind of like the Rural Planning Commission style, about a 7-member, and we'd outline maybe who
any dedicated people versus at-larges.
Yeah, we'd have like 4 dedicated people from the industry, 3 at-large. I could see a grower, a dispensary owner, you know, stuff like that. A user, somebody who's got a interest in that. But we need to talk about that, set it up, advertise for it, select it, get it moving. The same thing with the Economic Development Committee. I'm going to have request Julie Schnelzer come in. She's got a lot of things. She needs to talk about her program. There's a lot of things moving, the economic development, that, and planning.
Well, and we need to talk about before the budget is developed for economic development. I don't necessarily have any desire to do economic development like they've done it in the past.
Mm-hmm. I don't think she does either, so.
I think we need to be more intentional and make a plan for those dollars so we can get the intentional.
I don't mind spending money on economic development. I just don't see any results. I don't see any, you know.
No, right now we're piecing it out, where Parks gets $20,000 or $40,000, or so-and-so gets this amount, and so-and-so gets that amount.
There's
no plan. Correct.
With no direct.
So we need to have a plan of what is our intent for that, and where are we going to get the most out of.
So those are statutorily provided programs. There's 4 departments that the state says that we can do it. I think it's Washington County, though. They put theirs into their general fund. Everything the county does can be tied back to, you know, hopefully positive economic development programs. They look at the statute and say, state, we gave you the authority to regulate lottery locally, and you give us 1% of the revenues. You can go pound sand on telling us where we're going to spend those monies, those $300,000, when they generate $12.5 million locally, and they give us 1%. That's not going to work for me. And I kind of endorse that idea. So we have given planning, fairgrounds, airports, and parks. Historically, when I came in, it was $40,000 a year, I think, to each of those, 30 for airports, and they could spend it any way they like. We reduced that to, you get 20, you can spend it any way you like. You get 20 that you can apply for. It has to be a program, you know, geared towards improving some infrastructure, improving your advertising, you know, setting up a long-term plan. And the parks has been really good. I think fair's done really, really well. If there was a part of the economic development spending that's been done well, I kind of think that's been the most, you know, bang for the buck. They did the Whitehorse engineering preliminary thing to get that, okay, maybe we can do this, and it's moving forward, and now they've secured, they're working on securing $300,000 of grants as a result of that $20,000 initial seed money. I think that's a pretty positive direction. The fair's done similar stuff with that.
But it hasn't been very community targeted, and I think we could definitely focus on that. I know Julie's been giving it a lot of thought, and she's going to have her own ideas, but I think it's also incumbent upon her, before she refines hers, that she hears from ours.
So, let's get her on the calendar.
To do that would be great. I've heard from 90% of my liaison program. I wanted to give you guys a copy of last year's board goal. A lot of those, I'd say 50% at least, we did accomplish. And so we're going to, tomorrow I'm looking to probably put together the final on ours for us to, final draft for us to review again. So, you know, we don't need to do that one. Here's one I didn't think of. And then putting as a subsequent document all of the department's goals. And this doesn't have to be comprehensive. I would say that, like, Dave Streeter's provided four. I've got two more for him that I'm going to include on here. So it's kind of, that's why the liaison and the program manager should work together and say, this is what I think you should do this year. And so,
So I had asked about, I've heard reference to a forestry trust account,
mm-hmm.
and when I've inquired, it has not been established yet.
There's a reserve, but there isn't the trust account the way I had envisioned set up yet, and the board will hear about that.
Is it coming up soon, or is that something that, because that's something that I think we should proceed with, and
okay, great.
Make sure that it gets going. The interest is to put it towards a trust account that links to juvenile.
Dedicated funding stream that cannot be just arbitrarily robbed for whatever the whims of the future boards are.
Correct.
And changing the long-term philosophy of how county forest lands ought to be managed. It's really tough to manage, you know, a 60-year rotation when every 2 to 4 years you have potentially boards with different perspectives coming in and saying, no, we're going to change the management scheme to this. You can't manage a portfolio that way.
No.
And for good or bad, just giving broad, you know, you're going to work within the confines of the Oregon State Forest Practices Act. You're not going to go outside of that. You will, you know, giving Mr. Streeter some broad guidelines of the focus of, like, the ONC. It's predominantly to generate an economic well-being for the counties in which they reside, but also to provide for watersheds and other things. It's right there. But the main priority, it isn't multiple use, it's dominant use. All other BLM and Forest Service lands have a multiple use element to them. ONC is different. And I think our portfolio is different. Oregon State Forest Trust plans have a prioritization. It's different than multiple use. That's what the counties are litigating over. You didn't perform for what you were charged with initially. But Mr. Streeter, he has no concrete direction. And I think we need to establish that. So there's a twofold. There's a setting up the revenues. First off, saying this is what you're supposed to be doing under your forest management practices. And then when you do generate revenue, it's going to go for these specific purposes. First, to take care of your program, to make sure that you're doing adequate, you know, management and reforestation. And then if there are additional revenues on top of that, they're dedicated to juvenile shelter and detention or whatever mm-hmm. that the board agrees on. Not that the board couldn't change that. Ordinances, boards can approve, but they're also referable by the voters. You know, it's a 90-day repeal process. And if the voters say, no, that was a good policy, that we really agree with the previous board that set that, either the management or the trust, and we want to refer it to the voters just to say, no, you're going to steer those funds in somewhere else. It just gives future boards pause before they just start either robbing the trust entirely, you know, it'll be on a sustained yield, kind of a trust payment. You know, you don't get all of this. If he has a windfall revenue stream 1 year, or no revenue stream at all, you get what we haven't had in the past, steady funding anywhere, except for the property taxes. Trying to get these Golden Valley signed out would be great. So maybe we will hear more about that. There's Wally and Dave, and I have already started working on a draft.
Okay.
Have you guys got program goals kind of coming in?
I've gotten three.
I just did a reminder.
Yeah, I saw your email that was reminding them of that, and that got some movement.
Okay, great.
But I've received from Fairgrounds Airports Public Health.
Excellent.
And juveniles touch base with me, but they're still getting into me. And
perfect.
Public Works has got theirs done, and I think...
Yeah, his is huge.
Yeah. both of them.
I'd like Wendy, if she could, to thank you for your patience, to come up and review stuff with you guys. We've got some calendar things. February is going to be a real interesting month, and she's going to help bring us through a couple of issues that are... I've encouraged her to come forward and talk about, you know, the management of this office, maybe twice a month or whatever. But certainly the calendar's on a more regular basis, so we're covering stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Perfect. Could you guys jump into the theater and schedule what's happening? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next week? Yeah. And also there's a, I don't know if you guys want to go to this tree planting thing. February 9th, 10th, and 11th. They do it for 3 days.
County Forestry hosts maybe the largest youth tree plant in the state. Certainly in Southern Oregon. Maybe the only one in Southern Oregon.
That February?
Yeah.
9th through 11th? Yeah, I'm out of here. I'm gone that week.
Oh, okay.
And it's gone the 9th to the 12th.
Yeah.
You didn't write that down then.
Because we,
Oh, are you? Okay. He's been saying that since he came here.
I know.
Well, and I have ongoing conflicts with our Thursday afternoons at 2. Every other month I have lipstick. Every month I have LADTC. And... yet we always have a discussion, and I was specifically asked to be at LADPC this week, but now they have a special speaker coming this afternoon, but we get scheduled on a sheriff's funding that's important, and so it's, you know, it's kind of one of those things that...
How do you do both?
Yep. So, I don't know if that's what we look at that Wednesday afternoon as general discussions for the Thursday afternoon.
Maybe.
But I know that I'm going to have continued conflicts where I know the first Thursday of the month I always have a conflict, and then the second Thursday of the month every other month I have a conflict. And so...
So Thursday afternoons are bad for general discussions?
Correct. And not to mention, with us doing County College...
Yeah.
Thursday and Friday is generally the thing. So if we're having to leave in the morning to attend class in the afternoon on Thursday afternoons, maybe this is what that Wednesday afternoon gap is, and we keep the gap on Thursday afternoons. Mm-hmm. If we have to have a meeting, we can call one. But we, it's just something to consider, because to me, lipstick and LADPC are important.
Yep. Lipstick, certainly.
Lipstick is, and so much so that they've just changed it from quarterly to every other month.
Mm-hmm.
We have a grant position right now for a lipstick coordinator. The attempt through the AOC and the Criminal Justice Commission is to be more effective in our lipsticks. So right now is kind of a critical time for us to be not missing those meetings, but it continues to be a conflict.
You're about 9, 10, 11?
Mm-hmm.
9, 10, 11, I'll be back 12, so I'll be here on Monday.
Are you on 9? We should probably cancel this general discussion on the 9th. Or move it to Wednesday.
So if the agenda is coordination letters, we can handle that in a different form. But pulling the DMs already, I think that's kind of important. Let's see if she's available on Wednesday. Is that your suggestion? I think.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You've got a conflict in the afternoon.
Might not. See how it says flexible.
Oh, great.
That can be moved.
And what?
Okay.
And mine can be moved. So we'll try to reschedule her for 2:00.
Okay.
It's so funny. So Wendy and I went through this yesterday. Seemed like we got everything worked out, which is fine.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, maybe we don't even need to bring it to the board. Thank you. That we did.
So the following week, with you guys leaving on Thursday and Friday, Wednesday is going to be a big day. Wednesday, we have WBS in the morning and an admin that afternoon.
You said you gave us 2 weeks?
Yeah.
I have 1 week.
I have one.
And did I maybe give you my second week?
Oh, probably, yeah.
I did. I'm sorry. Do you need the... I'll give you my... Okay.
Yeah. Hello.
Yeah, I wasn't going to be here Wednesday until I realized that me and I'd be missing our public hearing, and I decided I'm not coming back. No,
I'm not a decision you've ever made.
Well, it's... so, yeah, I'll come back on Tuesday, and... Well, I haven't even figured out Monday yet. Essentially, trying to be intentional to be about the AOC meetings, especially as the legislative session is picking up. It was supposed to carry over to Tuesday mornings because the Resilient County meetings is at 8 a.m. in Salem on Tuesdays. They were followed by housing, but then all of a sudden they abruptly moved housing to Fridays. So I'm missing that one. So as soon as Resilient County is over, I'll come back to be here in time for Tuesday afternoon.
That's another thing we need to discuss is the travel budget. So do you anticipate traveling a lot this coming year? Because we only, you know, budgeted X amount of dollars, and we're already through that right now. We still have 5 more months to go.
Well, considering our county college is both of us, yes.
Once a month.
And it's once a month to various places. AOC is the same week as county college, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's
to go up to Salem and come back, to come right back 2 days later. That's why I wasn't coming back. I was just going to take a day off and stay up there. But I can try to continue to attend by phone. I just find that you don't hear. Mm-hmm. You can't. And so what's the point of participating if you're not participating?
Yeah, I just think for the budget purposes. Yeah,
it's the prioritization of the board. So for the last 6 years, board members other than myself have not traveled a lot. I've done it all. And so we've done... About it, I think it's a $10,000 per fiscal year on that. Talking with Klamath County, there's a $10,000 a year per person, and so they're very generous. I don't even know if Jackson County has one. Could feel it for that. Doug Reisenthal was traveling.
He did 75,000. So how far are we through the $10,000? Did you say?
We are 99.86%.
99, yeah.
Hey, we've done good in 1 month. Well, and I mean, to me...
It is what it is. We'll find the resources to
accommodate
the priority.
Is it a... I guess from my standpoint, if I'm going up, I'm going to go to as many of the meetings through the day. My priorities that I've committed to are the public safety and the resilient counties, but there's other ones that if I'm there, I'm going to go to the meetings.
I fully endorse you going, really. It's just a matter of we'll need to figure that out. You know,
okay.
Wendy and I will work.
I don't anticipate anything other than county college and local.
Okay.
So we'll look at what that stuff runs, run it out for the fiscal year, and then make an accommodation for next year, not having county college. But we will have it for 6 months. You guys go through the end of the year. We'll work on it. We'll bring back our budget.
I think our last one is October.
Well, yeah, and then the graduation is November. So at
the
AOC conference.
Correct. Yeah, yeah.
Conference.
The next question is, I guess, should be evaluated. Is it more efficient for us to have county-issued vehicles to do the travel or personal vehicles for those? I mean, right now it's fine because my Prius is going to get good gas mileage, but at the same time, we need to make sure that...
That means more money in your pocket.
No, what I want to know is what's more efficient for the county.
We'll figure out.
There's just nothing right now for fleet, right?
I don't.
The Crown Vic.
Yeah, it's still out there as an option, but we'll work on that. That'll be something we explore.
Okay. Sometimes it's been cheaper for the county to pay for personal travel, or I just...
Mm-hmm.
That's part of what we want fleet to look at.
But yeah.
Is it renting a car? Is it having a vehicle or fine?
Can
so
speak to that. We've kind of had an evaluation on what makes sense. It's not always the same thing.
No.
So
I just want to make sure that are we being most efficient with our dollars.
I think what she was looking for is direction from you guys about what kind of travel you expected to do in the next year as part of your job. So both your responses are very clear. You anticipate going to as many AOC meetings as possible. You both anticipate going to as much county college as possible, not anticipating a whole lot of other opportunities for travel, for requirements.
I've been assigned to the NACO Public Safety Committee, but mm-hmm. I'm not going to go this year.
Okay.
Because of the others, but it is something that if I've been assigned to it, I should probably.
Well, we'll look into the annual meeting for that, because mm-hmm. that's where the legislative stuff on NACO's policies will be determined for next year.
But I don't want to go unless it would have a direct benefit to us. To me, I do see a direct benefit to us for you to go for the forest lands. I don't see the public safety being that priority yet, but I have been appointed by AOC.
We need to probably build it into the budget this year, and if you choose not to go, you choose not to go.
Okay.
It'd be easier to have it in there and then try to go find money.
Yeah. And all three of us are gone February 16th and 17th.
Yeah, that's like the big day on Wednesday. That's 15th.
So excited. Just can't hide it.
Okay.
And then lastly, I have been evaluating the board administrative secretary position, because usually we had budgeted for 3 full-time positions, and now that's dwindled down to 2, and then I was speaking about getting a part-time person, and then Arthur and JJ said that we're just going to have to wait till after the budget to see if we can get that.
So I've kind of helped refine the idea that we're not going to replace necessarily another full-time employee. I'd rather look at ways this office can become more efficient or reduce the workload on the current staff. And a large part of that has been the quality or the extent of minutes that we provide. So Wendy Express, we have 8 meetings next week. It takes about, what I've heard in the past, and we've gone all the gamut, about an hour outside of the meeting to do the minutes for that hour of the meeting. I think that's too long, and I think the textual minutes is too extensive. In my opinion, they need to be short and concise to reflect the main action items and whether or not action was taken or not. A short thing on deliberations, but that's it. If people want to reference, you know, what happened in the meeting, they need to go to the audio recording, which we're going to change and how long we're keeping those posted. And I mean, that's what people really want to hear anyway, what was said. We're never going to capture it 100% unless we do verbatim minutes, which I'm totally opposed to. Most people have an opportunity to, and if they need to, they can request the audio file. So that's where I think technology is going, and that's going to save us a tremendous amount of time, energy, and money. And so Wendy and I have worked on how do we get that better, refined. So it's not this whole thing we do. It's just to have minutes and reflect what happened. That's not a very good
If we go there, I want us to make sure that we have the best equipment to record so the quality that's available to the public isn't questionable. Right now, just within the last 24 hours, I received complaints that because our wires next door are running the way they are, we're getting interference in the recordings. So you can't even clearly hear the audio because of interference because of that.
Was it a planning commission meeting?
It was, I think, our hearing on Monday. And where we had audio recorded, but it has interference because it has them. I forwarded it to Keith, who's our IT person. So he says he's aware, he's looking at things. But, you know, we went to RVCon the other night. At each chair, there's a microphone that's a speaker as well, so anybody that speaks is recorded clearly. It's not a matter of this person is recording and over there you're not hearing because it's in the distance. If we're not going to have it so that minutes are detailed minutes for the public, then we need to make sure that the quality of what's offered
produces great,
and that they need access to all of that. I just think that we should make sure that if that's the case. A bigger issue to me is not only are you guys taking minutes, but any videoed ones. Both are tied up where one's operating the cameras and the other's doing this. So therefore, how are you answering to the public's needs as they come to the window or anything else going on if one's dedicated to the computer and monitoring the cameras? Why are we even doing that? That was an IT function when this started. Or is there not an automated process? I don't know. To me, it's just kind of curious. I know the city contracts that person out through dollars with, what's the Rogue Valley? RVTD, is that what it is? So the potential of contracting a position to do the cameras.
They're not using PEG funds, or if they are, they're doing it illegally.
Okay.
We're not using PEG funds for that anymore, and so we've elected not to do contract with them because it was, I don't know, $60,000 we don't have the money to do that anymore. And so, yeah, you're right. Mr. McCafferty has got his team doing it, but they're doing it mostly remotely. And so our staff isn't doing anything with cameras.
They are in the day meetings, every one of them.
You are?
Yeah, that was fine when we had three people in the office, but now we probably just need to give it back to
them. IT's only doing the evening meetings.
The cameras, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So we
have... Just watching it.
They actually wanted me to take minutes and do the cameras up there, and that was just too much. So then we just decided Terry to do it.
The Wizard of Oz.
Jeez. Well, and, I mean, at some level, is it...
These are all cost things. We used to do them differently, and we don't do them anymore. Maybe our hands dropped on using peg funds to do it, and so we don't anymore.
Okay.
I think you're absolutely right, bringing, you know, if we're going to do this, then we're going to have to do that, and figuring out what that is. Because otherwise, I just, it's tough. Maybe the easiest thing to do is to hire another person. But it's really tough for me to put more burden on the ISF budget to keep doing that.
Well, and if equipment will provide the difference, if you have efficient equipment, maybe that's something you look at or not. Or
equipment's a one-shot deal. You don't have to pay anything on equipment. And equipment would ease the burden on the two girls, then you would need that third person. The third person is going to ease the burden. But what's the cost of that?
Yeah.
Well,
month after month after month.
And more tasks from other departments. They're taking on the mail for the whole county. Mm-hmm. They're taking on IT for the videos. They're taking on... Okay.
IT for us. They handle the cell phone stuff.
It's just a matter of, okay, fine, if we're, like every department, we've cut and they're taking on more, but do we have efficiencies in place to make sure that's done?
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's why I was evaluating the board administrative secretary position. I would want to bump it up a step.
She's acquired new duties.
Yeah. Stuff. Like all these red things. It's the new duties. So it's not the same. It hasn't been revised since 2014. So I just wanted to look into doing something like that.
Quite frankly, I don't know what either of your roles or titles are or functionality. So
I'd ask Wendy to do that evaluation.
Okay.
And so she's
job description.
And then it'll come back and.
Back to the board. I endorse it 110%. You know, I don't want people doing stuff that they're not being compensated for, especially if we've made reductions and they're picking up additional work. So it makes perfect sense to me. And so we'll work on that with JJ and bring it back to the board. But I like the idea of investing in technology. It goes along with last year's goals to improve efficiency, reduce costs, all that stuff. It isn't just about, you know, we can't just continue to spend the way we just don't have it anymore. You know, ISF will not increase by 10% in my opinion. That's the cap for me. And so everybody's doing their part to reduce. We've all made reductions, and we just have to be more efficient. I want them working harder. They work hard enough. They need to be doing less. It is not necessary anymore. And so, but we got to find that sweet spot where we're going to hear from people that say, "Well, I used to like reading all the minutes or what have you." Well, I'm sorry, because we're not a
meeting.
That is, no, that is something.
They're just condensed.
But that is something that is, somebody asked, do you have a different format than just the video? One thing that is a possibility of, as you have your agenda and you have your video posted, you click the agenda item, it takes you to, it indexes it in the video. So you don't have to read through and figure out, where do I find that?
However, those are only stored for like 14 months or something, so...
Well, and if we're eliminating written minutes, we can't just store for 14 months.
So we may have to, you know, and then we ask John, how much is that costing us on our servers, you know? How secure is it? Nothing simple. If it's something, I've said this a million times, if you think something's simple, you just don't know enough about the situation yet. Delve into it, and it'll get crazy complicated, crazy fast. But we'll get through it. So Wendy and I will be talking about, you know, I like the idea of Mike's here, because I'm the person who often people criticize the board, say they can't hear. And I just tell them, I don't have anything worth listening to, so you're lucky. But that doesn't go over well, so people want to hear it either way. We'll work on that. I like the idea, Mike.
Yeah. So one more thing. Should we get chairs in the end that chair?
Oh, yeah. I almost filed 4 or 5 of them in my pickup, leaving this. RV Conga, they were really good chairs.
We're really frugal over here.
No.
We're still working on fully depreciating those 30-year-old chairs.
They're wood. They don't wear out.
Yeah, they're still in the queue to be the
They just 13 pounds on them.
They drink at the right time. And, you know,
well, I mean, honestly, I have an issue with there's no power available. I cannot bring my Surface over there and sit through a 5-hour hearing because there's no power for me to plug it in.
Hmm.
There's in between you and I seats, there's no outlet. To me, that should be a standard thing that if we're going to more efficient paperless, we should have power so we can plug in our device.
I've been over there and I've never experienced a power problem in 6 years, but if it happens, you know, but when I get done, I'm stocking it again. I don't know. It's just me. We'll figure out a way to get your power though. When you write that down, ask Ryan to work on it.
I found an extension cord in the closet that looks about 30 years old and it has a 20-foot cable, but
we'll get it figured out, Commissioner Morgan.
Okay.
So can, you've got your red letter thing for your position. Are you going to get us what your position use description used to be?
Is it your position or her position?
Terry's position.
Okay, Terry's position.
JJ, Cindy, and I will work on a redraft. You'll have a red line version of what it used to be. And then you guys haven't done one of these before. And then where it is, and there'll be a form that says budget implications to this step increase and all that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's in the budget because I did budget for 3 full-time people.
Okay.
I'll also be talking about budget directives after we talk about the goals that you guys have for each department. So I'll be working with Wendy. And that's the responsibility of the chair to manage. So, but feel free to provide her anytime, you know, if you want to see something improve. Last thing I want to talk about, other than Arthur and Jay, just for 9 minutes. Do you guys have stuff? Just here. Okay.
We're gonna have a band.
So I proposed an LC to a legislative concept that Representative Wilson on the state divesting. I don't have that many copies of this, but that's okay. State lands. Less than 10% of the state's holdings back to the county. I just wanted to give you a copy of that. We have a representative from one of our unions in the audience, and I had heard through the grapevine that they actually understood why this was being proposed from a resource management standpoint within the counties that they have state trust lands and might endorse the proposal, which would really help us. I mean, I think the state privatization of public lands is not very popular. This isn't a privatization. This is taking those county lands that we had, state has held in trust and releasing those back to the county in which they reside. So it might have legs. It certainly wouldn't hurt to have one of the unions support this effort. And really, the revenues that could be generated if they were managed in the county's portfolio, the yellow squares up there that are state lands, the description I've heard is anywhere, it's about 8,800 acres, but it's probably closer to 7,000 acres of state land. We could really improve the management. The historic revenues have been right around $10,000-$15,000 a year, which there's an assessment, it's a couple bucks an acre. It probably just pays for the fire assessment on those lands. I think we could generate a revenue off. They're pretty nice, big chunk, 640-acre squares that we would be able to manage, I think, for a part of our portfolio for revenue that would just, you know, go back into helping provide programs for the county.
So I know that there is something with a state legislative website that you can do a bill tracker and you can follow. So.
Okay.
I appreciate getting this so we can actually kind of see if it progresses or not.
The chamber is looking to come in and do a kind of a, you know, with coordinated effort on the legislation with our local state delegation. We'll be doing that week or two out. Martin, she facilitates that. So we'll get a list of all of the issues that they're championing.
Okay.
So, anything else for the good of the order? I'm going for a little while here. So it is 11:30, and we are adjourned to see you this afternoon.